Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Game Junk Podcast for April 2012. This is episode number 11, and my name is Sean.
My name is Frank.
My name is Andrew.
And coming up on this week's episode, we're going to kind of switch up the format a little bit. No official reviews, but we're definitely going to be talking about Kingdoms of Amalur: Reckoning. We're also going to talk about the PlayStation Vita, some new 3DS games, and a bunch of other cool stuff. And we've got some good news to discuss as well.
And based on the recent film junk format change hysteria that's ensued in the comments... Yeah. That's just, I think the reasons for this should be explained, and I think the listeners will approve.
I think so.
So, we're really talking, reviewing games 4 months after they came out. Like, it's not like we're on the pulse of the video game nation right here.
Exactly.
So, this we're not in a position where we have to finish games to do a show. We can do shows whenever we want. Just talk about opinions that we have as industry professionals. Which is the appeal of the show anyway. People will get their reviews from many, many sources on the internet.
Right.
We're just here for fun and creative commentary.
We're just here for fun times.
So.
But yeah, I mean, like, obviously we're going to talk about stuff we played. There will be games that all of us have played that we'll get into. It's just more a question of we don't want to have played a game right to the end. And, you know, like... You know, we'll just basically hopefully be able to record maybe once a month. But
and if anyone feels while talking about something they played, they feel they can give it their official star rating out of 4, they can.
Right.
And will.
And beyond that, we'll still be doing news, junk mail, all the other stuff. And I guess I should mention Hot Topic this week.
Whew.
It's going to be a big one.
It is hot.
We're going to be talking about next-gen console rumors. Frank can't contain himself.
We're going to be talking about DS Street Pass.
A lot. There'll be a lot of 3DS Street Pass talk. It is the sensation that's sweeping Frank's nation a year after the fact.
So before we get into
we should release this as a show that happened a year ago because I'm talking
Mass Effect
about,
2 review.
Yeah, we all played Mass Effect 2 and we're playing old 3DS games, so
makes
it's
sense.
Pretty embarrassing, to be honest.
I don't have a problem with it because I think, you know, there's so much focus in games on whatever the latest release is. You know, nobody has time to play every new release. So go back, play a game that's 5 or 10 years
Fuck
old
it.
And tell people, you missed this one. That's what it's all about.
You missed Mass Effect 2, people. Well, you fucked up.
Maybe not that one. But, okay, so before we jump into news, I just want to give a quick little plug for our buddy Dax, who has been on the show before. He has done the artwork for
World of Warcraft
for Game Junk. Yes, and so he actually just recently started doing a webcomic that may be of interest to video game fans. It's Udon has teamed up with I don't know if is it Namco Bandai.
Yes.
So they're doing a bunch of webcomics based on sort of old classic video game characters. He's doing a webcomic on Bravo Man.
Classic is debatable. Old is for sure.
This is one I hadn't even heard of before, but so, it was actually for the TurboGrafx.
Big time. I almost bought one today off eBay, but I had to restrain myself.
You don't have one already?
No. Well, no, I almost bought the game. I have a TurboGrafx, but...
Yeah, so I don't know. I was reading about it the other day, and it sounded pretty interesting, but... anyway, check out his comic and all the others. They're at shiftylook.com, and... yeah, give them a shout if you like it.
After finally looking at some footage on YouTube today of Bravo Man on TurboGrafx, do that first because it gives the comics a nice little extra comedic punch. It's already there, but there's some good inside game jokes. And you get to see some sweet TurboGrafx footage as well.
It's a win-win.
Do it.
All right, so... We're going to do some news here, and really, I think there's just two main stories that are probably going to be fairly big discussions. And I think the first one we have to talk about Kickstarter, specifically the Double Fine Kickstarter campaign, which was the campaign that kickstarted it all, if you want to call it that, because I think, you know, Kickstarter has been around for what, like a year, year and a half, maybe something like that. And, you know, there have been some projects being funded. I had mostly seen it being used for independent films. And Double Fine, I think, was the first sort of big name video game company to say, you know what, we want to do something. We don't want to be beholden to a publisher. Give us a bit of money here, and we will deliver the game we want to make, which is also the game you want us to make. And what? How much did they ask for? Was it 200,000?
I thought it was 600,000.
600,000.
Yeah, I think it was more than 200,000.
It might have been four. It's definitely at least 400,000.
I think it was 400. I think it was 400, yeah.
The mean average.
We should probably have looked this up.
I can look it up right now. But the important thing is they ended up getting way more than
12
that.
12 million.
2 million.
2 million. I'm
but, I thought it was 3.2 mil.
Is it 3.2 now?
Look it up.
We are so up on our facts.
Just look it up. It was like so long ago.
Anyway, the point being, they got way more money than anyone ever expected them to get. And it sort of just exploded this whole new craze of video game development and people looking for funding to make games that they'd always wanted to make but never could find a publisher for. Like, we've had Wasteland 2 is now getting funded. What else? There's a new Shadowrun game. I can't even remember all the ones that are out there, but it's just becoming this huge phenomenon to the point where some people are saying, you know, will we even need publishers? Like, what's going to happen? And I don't know. It's kind of an interesting situation right now. I mean, none of these games have really actually been released. There's a lot of issues surrounding that. You know, what if people give money to these games and then they end up sucking? But what are your sort of initial thoughts on this? Is this like a brave new world, or is this just a fad? Like, what's going on here?
Well, I like the idea of doing it, but like you were saying, nothing's been released yet. I think there could be a lot of blowback, especially for Double Fine, because they were kind of the ones to start it. If they come out and the adventure game's not fun, you know, people are going to be pissed. You know, we talked whatever show that was, who knows how long ago, with Dan about the whole, like, people feeling entitled. Well, this people are going to really feel entitled because they actually paid for this up front. So, and some of them would have paid more than the game would have cost regularly. Now they're getting stuff for it. But, you know, at the same time, you know, it's kind of like a PR risk to do it, because if you fail, you know, it could really blow back at your,
well,
your face.
I think the incentives are good enough that they might get through some of that regardless. And
sure,
it's,
yeah,
it's not a $60 game. It's like a $10 game, right?
Right.
But the big thing to me is I kind of think it is a fad, in that I don't think there's many companies that can do this based on reputation. And I would think Double Fine,
you have to have some sort of IP already.
Or just be someone recognizable and quote unquote beloved in the industry. Like, I could see Double Fine doing this. I could see Valve doing this.
Oh, I don't know. I think Valve is too much money. I think this would blow back in Valve's face.
I don't know. I just, there's certain people who are kind of untainted and, you know, everything they do is kind of turns to gold, so to speak. And I think Double Fine is one of those companies that people love, and I think their fan base is bigger, and their critical reception is great, and I just don't think it's something that necessarily translates to publishers. Like, EA would probably look at not great sales figures for Brutal Legend or something like that, right? Like, the stuff they do doesn't necessarily appeal to the average gamer. It appeals a lot to hardcore gamers and people who recognize the name Double Fine. And they want to do what they want to do, and this is a great way for them to do that. And they, if they know they have fans that want it, they have it. I think just the videos and, like, funny personalities like Tim Schafer will provide enough entertainment feedback. And I actually think they were pretty upfront about that, in terms of, you know, if we fail, you'll get to watch us fail. Like, that's one of the one of the incentives.
I do like how they're doing the whole documentary sort of follow us along this journey kind of thing. I think that adds a lot. I mean, and you funded, right, Dwyer?
I did.
Did you, Frank?
No.
I also did not, but like that documentary is pretty interesting to me. I think that's kind of neat just to see, especially since, you know, we've been in a few studios now as a whole of this group. So, to see sort of like another studio's take on making games might be a pretty neat insight into how another studio runs that we would never normally have the chance to see. I mean, obviously they're not going to show you everything. That's not what the documentary is going to be for, but, I think that's a really neat idea that they came up with. I don't know, maybe that was pretty common to Kickstarter, but I'd never seen it before.
So let me ask you guys, you didn't donate. You're both pretty huge fans of Double Fine. Any particular reason why?
I'm actually not a huge fan of the adventure type games.
Okay.
Like, I know you love your Maniac Mansions, all that style.
Right.
Not my cup of tea.
So you just didn't see yourself playing the game?
I might eventually. It's not that exciting to me. Like, if it would have been a sequel to Psychonauts or Brutal Legend or Costume Quest.
Oh, yeah.
Or anything like that, I would be in 100%.
Okay. Dark City?
I'm kind of in the same boat. I mean, like, I've played a lot of the Telltale ones recently. Like, I just played a little more of Monkey Island a little while ago, and I played the Back to the Future ones, I think, on the last show I talked about it. And, you know, those games are okay. They're not great. I mean, I know their humor is going to be there. It's going to be funny. But I can just wait until the game comes out and buy it then. I don't really need to put my money up front.
And see, but that's the thing.
Actually, I would say the other reason I didn't contribute is because it was already successful.
I was like, kind of that too.
Why, man. you know what I mean? Like,
I was thinking about
Feed the Beast.
But that, I mean, yeah, I can see that. But it's kind of funny because it almost seems like the opposite effect happened for a lot of people, because this thing made its goal in a couple days, basically, and then it kept going and going. And people knew it was already funded, but they kept donating money. It's like they wanted to be a part of something. I don't know.
That could be it, I think. Exactly. They just, you know, they saw it was like that big crowd, you know, crowd rage or whatever, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, like,
what I'm trying to think.
I don't. When I think of those things, it's almost
mob mentality. That's what I was thinking.
I have to have like a gut reaction to the idea.
Right.
Right. Like, if it was Panzer Dragoon or a full motion video Sega CD collection or something, like, I would donate tons to that.
Right.
Right. It's just the nature of that kind of thing is there's like this passion towards it. Like, you believe in it. And I'm just an honest guy. The heart and passion wasn't there.
Okay.
So I had to say, no, thank you. I'm curious to see the results.
Right. But I mean, the thing is, like, you have to think about it. Like, I guess for me, I don't remember exactly when I donated. Like, I think within the first couple of days, and I just looked at the amounts and I said, well, you know what? Would I buy this game sight unseen? Yeah.
Yeah, so why not, right?
Why not?
Exactly. Yeah. I agree. And that's the best part. Like, for the, it's pretty good value. You're always getting value. It's probably a better value than if you bought it day one. So you might as well do it there. I should have. I just.
And this does only really work for, like we were talking about before, well-known companies. Like, if it was not Double Fine and some other jack-off said, I'm going to make an adventure game, you would not have put your money down.
Well, here's the thing, though. I wanted to get into this because Kickstarter actually released some stats like a couple weeks ago, and there were a lot of people saying the same thing. I felt the same way. I was like, yeah, well, okay, of course Double Fine can get all this money, but what about the average Joe who actually has a really good idea, but nobody knows who the hell he is? How is he going to get funding? And they actually went through and they looked at the stats and they said, you know what? It's not that people are, you know, just donating to a couple big projects. They're actually, you know, it's spilling over. Like, people, as soon as they get into Kickstarter, now they're going every day to the website and looking what's out there, what's cool, you know, can I donate to this? And, like, I was going to bring up, there's this one link that I've seen other people passing around. It's just some random guy who basically said he wants to make a video game. And, like, I don't even think he has any experience in the game. Like, in the game industry, let me read you just a little bit of about his project. His project is called Your World, a video games project by Elwood Bartlett. And it says, an MMORPG game built by gamers, for gamers, and funded by gamers. Are you tired of games that do not have everything you want? I know I am. For example, Guild Banks. Who creates a game but does not give you access to the bank right away? All of the current games. That's who. It's sad. I will start at the beginning and work my way through the game. Your World is not going to be the actual name of the game. The name is currently used to simply stress the vision of the game.
The name is Game, where you play a game and for gamers. And how many times can this guy use the word game in fucking three sentences?
He basically just lays out all this stuff. And basically, you know, he's a fan of MMORPGs and he wants to make one.
So has he met his goal?
So
he should call it Guild Bank.
He's trying to get 1 million, 1.1 million. He currently has 31,000. So
does he know it takes like 10 million to make an MMO?
he's pretty far off, but the guy has $30,000. Like,
which, as far as I know, with Kickstarter, if you don't hit your goal, you can't use it.
No, you don't get any of it.
That's correct.
So he's got nothing.
And he probably will not reach his goal. But see, this is the thing. Like, okay, so we've got anybody can throw something up on Kickstarter, right? And you'd assume that through the process of democracy, the good stuff will find the funding and the bad stuff won't. But I don't know. I mean, like, I think I do think that's actually what's going to happen. I think stuff like this, there's nothing wrong with it. He can throw up his Kickstarter, whatever. It's probably not going to get funded.
It's a game for gamers, by gamers, for gamers to game with.
Let's pretend he makes his 1.1 million goal. What happens when he gets his money and tries to start making a game and realize he's so over his head that he cannot do it no matter how much money he gets? What happens to that money?
Goes into the Guild Bank. Everyone everyone collects.
But, I mean, and that's the thing. One of these projects is going to fail, and then what's going to happen after that? Will that stop people from donating in the future?
Is there anything on Kickstarter that you found that's like a... You know, what happens in that case? Or are they not responsible at that point?
I don't know.
I don't think they're responsible, but...
Okay.
I mean, I think you have to deliver your product.
What's your dream Kickstarter? Like, the one thing that you would want to see on here that you would love?
That will find adventure game.
Like, for me, it would be if Nintendo said, we're not going to pay anyone to do trophies or achievements. We don't think it's necessary, but we think it would take $3 million to develop a good system for that through our games. If you guys can raise that, it'll be part of the Wii U. I would donate for $100.
Get out of here.
Well, what about this? $1,000 donation gets you a Wii U 3 weeks ahead of time before release date. Every thousand you give, you get a Wii U a week earlier. Oh my God. How good would that be? Because then you're feeding the... I've said feed the beast twice already. I apologize to everyone. You're feeding the beast because then you have access to whatever Nintendo achievements are before everyone else. So you already got a head start on the game, you see. You're going to have the highest Nintendo score out of anyone. It's a self-fulfilling system. It's a money-making win. Listen
and
up.
And it makes sense to do it now because there's no release date. So Nintendo can finish it. And then whoever was the biggest bidder just push the release date up that much time.
Oh my God, Reggie. Is Reggie
win?
So if anyone here listening knows Reggie, pass this on. It's ominous.
Yeah, $3 million to Nintendo is probably a drop in the bucket.
Hey, man. Do it.
So, but I mean, do you think if a company like Nintendo put up a Kickstarter, do you think people would support it?
No. Yeah.
No.
Absolutely.
A company that
Nintendo
has
maybe
a ton of money.
Not EA. If EA did it, they're
and like,
$0.
And honestly, what's to stop all these other companies from just saying, you know what, why are we putting our own money into this? We'll just get the fans to donate money. And
well, it's kind of what's happening right now in a way with pre-orders and stuff, but the money's going into GameSpot's pocket or GameStop's pocket.
Right.
Right? Like, that's kind of what's happening. It's a promise to buy, although you can always get a pre-order back, but they're kind
they
of playing
the interest on all
yeah,
the money.
Exactly. Like, pretty much.
And how many
we'll
times have you
later
gone
in the show, EB and GameStop are fucked.
And how many times have you gone to a EB to pick up your pre-order and they don't have it.
Never.
Actually, I've never done it at eBay. I've done it at Walmart. Walmart a couple
Walmart's
times.
Walmart's suspect.
They are suspect.
That's why I got a $50 gift certificate.
That's why I don't
do
that shit.
On the day of the Nintendo 64 release date.
So
we lined up and they didn't have them ready. My mom took a piece out of that manager. He did not know what hit him.
So one more thing I wanted to talk about on Kickstarter is I noticed I was checking out the Wasteland 2 Kickstarter page. And they actually, I don't know if they added it after or before because it was the first time I looked at it. But they have a kind of like pay it forward thing on there. So if they meet their goal, which they have, they've crushed their goal. They'll give, I think it was 5% of whatever they got contributed to them back to Kickstarter to fund other projects, which I thought was pretty neat.
See, that doesn't interest me.
Well, I mean,
I'd rather have incentive as a purchaser to get some kind of profit margin.
Well,
if I pick the right things to invest in on Kickstarter. And that's the way I think this thing.
Well, maybe they'll put it to a vote.
Take off.
Maybe they'll put it to a fan vote of what they should use the money to vote.
But if they start rewarding people who invest in the right things, that's pretty much that's what publishers do, right? They're taking risks on making games.
Right.
Now, if they can diversify that risk across multiple people, but still reward them the same way they reward publishers, or maybe even just a fraction of that, and like split the rewards between the developer and the millions of investors potentially, that's where it could get really interesting.
Well, it's funny you mention that, Frank, because there's actually some legislation going through in the U.S. right now that's kind of related to that, and it's actually inspired by the Double Fine Kickstarter, because they have, you know, like to invest in a company or something like that, you need to have a certain amount of money, you need to have connections and blah, blah, blah. But the idea of crowdsourcing funding and investments, they're actually trying to put through some legislation that will allow that. And it's because they're seeing what's happening with Kickstarter and they're saying, you know, people want to invest in things and you know, get a little bit back from it. You know, maybe they don't have $1 million, but they got a few thousand. So, you know, why not?
And it's better for everyone, right?
Yeah, totally.
You don't have to go to one publisher and ask them to put a ton of risk into something. You spread your risk across a huge plane and nobody gets completely burned.
So you're backpedaling on your fad comment earlier now?
Well, no one had come up with that idea until I just said
But like, so
it still is kind of a fad though.
So, but do you guys think that publishers are going to be threatened by this? Like, is it like the music industry where record labels, like, what's even the point anymore? You can just sell your music directly to the customer online or whatever. Like,
I don't think so. I mean, maybe if they're funding like small adventure games or XBLA games exclusively, maybe. But you're never going to get $30 million to make Gears of War.
AAA.
You're never going to get that. And plus, the only people who would be shopping on Kickstarter to get a Gears of War would be people that already have enough money to do it. You know, like Epic's not going to go on Kickstarter because they have enough people from Unreal Engine licenses that, you know, they can do whatever they want. It's not, you're not going to find EA going up there and asking,
yeah,
you know,
they can self-fund.
EA's funding who knows how many projects. They're not going to go ask for $10 million from everybody. I mean, they might, but it doesn't really make sense to me.
Say Bungie suddenly said, we want to make a Halo game without Microsoft. And I know they probably can't because I don't think they own that.
What's their old game that they made before?
Marathon?
Yeah, Marathon. They want to make a Marathon sequel.
Right. And they don't want Microsoft involved. They want to do it all themselves. They go to Kickstarter. I don't know. I think they might get more than $2 million or $3 million or whatever Double Fine got. But you know, I think it does depend on the project. It depends on how much people trust the company behind it and, you know, how much interest there is.
But also, Double Fine was the first. So that, in a sense, is a fad. I think getting that much over your funding or over your target is a fad. I don't think you'll see every game that's put up now just exploding out the charts of cash. I think you know, most games that are realistic in their pitch or target will probably get their target plus a little.
I don't think it'll be like eight times. Like, I think that they've probably, that's the peak, and after that, nobody's going to reach that level. But again, like, when you think about the projects that are being funded right now, they're pretty niche products, right? Like, if somebody came along and said, you know what, they, you know, nobody's going to make a Gears of War 4, but we want to make it, you know, and think of how many people know Gears of War and actually want to play that. Like, maybe it could happen.
That's a good thing. Think about Call of Duty.
Yeah.
Like, if Call of Duty,
the guys who originally were part of the team that split off, what if they said, hey, we're going to make, you know, some new military first-person shooter?
And what if they said that they're only going to, you're going to buy it once, and it's just going to be like a World of Warcraft style of upgrades.
Subscription?
Well, not even that, but just, you know, not like NHL where they release it every year. It's just going to be one version that's constantly updated.
Please, that'll never happen. That's not good business sense. Why would you put out one product?
If you can destroy your competition,
$1.
Like, if that's the only way to get to Call of Duty, if people thought the only, like, why buy Call of Duty every year when I can buy one that's going to last forever and keep getting better? And, like,
yeah, your market will eventually dry up when everyone has a copy, though. And then
No. Because what you'll do is you can say
microtransactions?
No, to the original investors, you know, you'll always get the latest DLC for free. You'll always get the upgrades where people who come around later would have to pay for it and stuff like that. Like, you could incentivize a product like that, I think.
The other thing that Kickstarter does, too, like, kind of what you were saying, Frank, with that, like, if people can donate like $10,000 or more. Like, the limit is not set, right? So, I mean, they give you obviously pretty good incentives. Like, I think I saw on Wasteland, they like fly you out to wherever and you're part of the release party and all that stuff. Like, I mean, that's probably pretty cool for big fans. But I mean, like, that's a lot of money to spend on one game. Yeah. Like, people are crazy. I would not put down $10,000.
Well, I guess that's another question.
What if you got the Wii U a year in advance?
Never.
I would do that. I would do it.
But, like, I guess, like, are people taking advantage of fans in that sense? Knowing that fans will donate, you know, tons of money and will do anything for their favorite companies and favorite
I don't think so. I don't think it's their responsibility to say what, like, to manage what people will and won't give. I mean, it's like in a silent auction. Are you going to put a cap? If someone really wants a hockey stick, they're going to pay a lot for it. You don't put a cap on it. Be like, no, you're overpaying for that hockey stick.
I guess that's true.
Ouch. Shot down.
All right. Well, any other thoughts on the Kickstarter thing? Or should we jump into...
Just an interesting ripple to an ever-expanding industry.
Yeah. Well, I think it's going to change things, but I don't know what the end...
I think it'll be a nice compliment to the current system. Because right now, like, a lot of the smaller guys are getting killed. And I think this might be, like, people with established products, I think it'll help keep them afloat longer. Especially, yeah, like Double Fine, when they're trying to do stuff that is not really, you know, publisher friendly.
Well, what about the publishers who all passed on that idea?
Yeah.
Well, they gotta look stupid. A lot of egg on those faces.
But again, it's like, what if they didn't go to Kickstarter and they did just make this game on their own? Would that many people have actually bought the game? Like,
yeah, it's questionable.
Yep.
Well, they made $3 million, right? So they got $3 million from Kickstarter.
I don't know.
3.3.
So that's right? 300,000 people need to buy it if it's $10 just to break even.
Easy.
I don't know.
And anything else they make later is gravy.
Yeah. Well, that's the nice thing about it.
Fucking gravy.
Yeah. I think it's
gravy.
As far as, like, I mean, we have talked before about how, you know, the game industry, much like the movie industry, is a lot of sequels, a lot of brand names, and nobody wanting to take risks on anything else. So this is another opportunity for some people to take some risks. And, you know, it's pretty cool because of that. So, I guess kind of on a related note, you know, as you guys were talking about fans potentially feeling more entitled because they've paid into this. There's definitely been a news story that's been talked about quite a bit over the last month or so regarding Mass Effect 3, which none of us have played as of yet.
I've partially played.
Partially played.
I own it, not played.
May get to it for the next show. But so the game came out, people played it, and I don't really even know how these things start, but so many people apparently were disappointed with the ending that they started setting up petitions asking BioWare to change the ending. And I mean, that in itself, I mean, it's one thing to complain about it and say the ending sucked, I was disappointed, but to go to that extra step and say, you know what, you should change the ending for us. Well, so people did that.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say I'm going to love the ending.
Okay.
I'm going to love it too.
I think it's going to be amazing.
Okay.
I can't wait to love the ending.
So BioWare did actually respond to this, and they've announced that they're going to have a free DLC that is an extended ending. So it's not really a changed ending, but perhaps fleshes things out a little more.
Is it an epilogue, so to speak, or
something like that? But
I haven't read too much about this, obviously not wanting to spoil.
Right. Yeah, me neither. But so I'm kind of like, you know, on the one hand, it seems kind of like they caved. But on the other hand, it's kind of a clever way of doing it. You know, it's not like, okay, yes, we're changing the ending. It's like, well, you know what? Okay, we'll give you something extra. And it's free, so people can't complain about that.
I think it's gutless.
Really?
Yeah. If you thought that was the right ending and that's the way you made the game, stand by it. Tell these fucking idiots to shut up and don't buy it if you don't like it. Or don't buy our next game. Guess what? They will. They'll buy it in droves. They'll be lining up weeks in advance. They'll run to little Mr. EB games.
They'll fund your Kickstarter.
They'll be throwing pre-orders down. They'll be buying the N7 Shepherd Warrior suit. It's the dumbest story I've ever heard in my life. These guys saying, do people think movies should change their ending? Like, we've had this topic before. I don't think video game narrative is even close to a level of movie narrative yet. And
so
it's an imitation of movies at best. And Jay said that before too, blah, blah, blah. But to think fans are entitled to a certain ending is a joke. And it needs to stop immediately.
Go ahead.
If I owned a company and I was making the third part of a trilogy based on this, I would make the worst ending possible just to fuck with people.
And what happens if, okay,
don't tell me how to end my fucking game.
Not counting your worst ending possible. But what if they put out this epilogue or whatever and people hate that too?
Yeah.
What are they going to do then? Cave again?
Make a new ending. Keep going.
I mean, it's quite possible.
It's funny because I wish Dan was on from a few episodes ago because we got into it a bit about false sense of entitlement. And this is like right up my alley. I'm with you, Frank. I hate that people feel entitled to this. And like, I don't know, I feel like Dan would be gung-ho, like, yeah, bring on the new ending kind of thing. But I don't know. We'll have to ask him.
We'll have to wait till I see the ending. It's tough to say.
Yeah.
Right.
But shouldn't you just be happy and say, oh, man, like, gamers love to complain. Like, they would love to say, oh, man, that ending was shit. Like, people love to rag on the Star Wars prequels, and it's fun to poke holes at bad things.
Right.
So is it just because all of the Mass Effect stuff was so good except for that one thing? Like, it's weird how just because it's really tough to comment without knowing the ending.
You know what frustrates me too is like every media outlet seems to be like, oh, you know, gamers put 150 hours into this game across three titles and, oh, you know, maybe it's like justified. Like, that's bullshit. Like, I don't know. What if World of Warcraft guys put in, you know, something shitty and people get pissed off? Well, people
are like, shut down the servers.
Or they shut it down. People would fucking rampage. Yeah. Like, they put in way more time than 150 hours into World of Warcraft.
I guess one comparison would be Lost. People
right.
feeling that the ending to Lost wasn't satisfying.
Right.
I guess I wasn't uber satisfied with the ending. I had my complaints, but I have complaints about almost everything I watch or, you know, I nitpick stuff, and that's just the nature of watching and critiquing things.
Right. So my question is, what is it about video games or even Mass Effect specifically that makes people think, let's take action, let's demand a different ending so that we will be satisfied with
it? Well, I think we all know one thing that it is. It's EA. and people hate EA. it just won that worst company in America show.
Yeah, I was going to bring
don't even
that
get
up.
Me started. That thing's ridiculous too. How do they know it's the worst? Like, fuck, it makes no sense. That angers me. But I don't know. I think it's just people with nothing better to do, or people who
it's kind of like
buy
suing.
Another game.
It's like suing in the States, right? I mean, oh, I'm going to get my free ticket. You know, they probably want more content, so they're going to bitch about it and get more content out of it for free.
But so you guys don't think that it's related to the fact that when you're playing a game, especially one that's like an RPG, like Mass Effect, you're making decisions, you're investing yourself in this character, that you feel more a part of it.
That's all illusion. Like, you're playing a game, you're making choices. We have systems to like play different cinematics based on a choice. Like, it's all this illusion of control and interactivity.
Right.
Like, but you have to be able to see that at some point.
Well, you're entitled, do you not think that people are affected in a certain way? Like, I just watched that documentary Comic-Con.
If the last page you picked in a Choose Your Own Adventure wasn't satisfying, do you demand them to rewrite the Choose Your Own Adventure book?
Maybe.
The experience of interactivity is leading up to the end. The end's probably the least thing you should be concerned about, because in order to have a video game where there's a bunch of choices and things are changing in the world, obviously, those changes have to manifest while you're playing. You can't have 20 different factors lead to an ending, or you'd have to make 100 different endings. It's impossible. If there's one thing that has to be finite about a game, it's the end.
Not really, though, because aren't there different multiple endings?
To some respect, like, do you know what I mean? It has to be maybe one or two things. Unless you want to make the cost of the game would be retarded,
right?
To make 100 different endings that are satisfactory with each gamer. And then let's say you make 10 endings and people like one of them and they hate the other 9. Well, like, where does it end? Is it good enough?
I guess that's what I'm a little confused about, because again, you know, I haven't seen the ending, but I was under the impression that Mass Effect would be the kind of game where there would be multiple endings. And if you're not satisfied with one, you play through it again and you get a different one. But I guess there's one ending for everything.
I don't know.
I heard there's 12 endings or something like that.
We don't even probably know what we're talking about. I'll say this. I'm surprised after playing Mass Effect 3 for 2 hours, having jumped into it right after Mass Effect 2, that's the complaints aren't completely different things. Like, the whole story of Mass Effect 2 is pretty much thrown out at the beginning of 3, from what I can tell. There was changes in the world that affect the world of Mass Effect 3, but I feel like what happened to Mass Effect 2 meant nothing. And really, the way Mass Effect 2 resets, with like Shepard dying and being reconstructed, isn't that just as making the things that happened in 1 just as irrelevant?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of funny in a way that, like, I know it was a big selling feature for Mass Effect 2 that you could play Part 1 and carry your character over. And I don't know how many other games do that. Like, did Dragon Age do that?
You're really just carrying over world decisions.
Right.
Like a few fucking game fights.
But that was a big thing. A lot of people were pretty excited about that because, again, they built up a character. They invested their themselves in these characters, and then they could carry it over.
I believe you could do it in Suikoden 2 for the PS1.
Okay, there you go. But I, having just picked up Mass Effect 2 and not having played through Part 1, and I did that little comic book prologue thing, and they just present you with the choices in like 5 minutes.
Yeah, you set 6 game flags. Sweet, let's go. Keep going.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm like, that's all I missed out on. Okay. And I mean, I'm sure that's obviously.
And that's really all it
thing,
is. Like, when you import your character in Mass Effect 3, you see.
It tells you what you did.
You see the game flags you set. Yeah. You said, you chose Ashley. You saved Rex. Like, yeah. That's all it is. If you can't. Again, we're stipulating that the fact that people, the fact that people care so much is because they've made choices is the reason they're so upset about the ending.
Right.
But you gotta, like, it's all just systems and nonsense. Like, if it's your, I thought the point was to play because you're having fun.
Apparently, it's to play.
And if you're at the end, the fun was over anyway. Sure, you can bitch about it to your friends or something, but to feel entitled for a company to change their ending, is
well, and I mean, the funny thing about it is they're saying, we didn't like your ending, give us a new one. But it's like, okay, well, what do you want? Like, are you telling me what the ending should be? Or are you just saying, give me something else? Because again, like you said, how do we know they're not going to hate the new ending? Like, it,
they should do
it's a never ending cycle.
They should do the DLC where it's like a joke. Like, it's the most ridiculous ending, like a Scooby, like, Wayne, like the Wayne's World Scooby-Doo ending or something like that. They should do the most ridiculous ending, just to slap
Mass
it.
Mass Effect 2 took place in somebody's, inside somebody's snow globe or
just
something like
that.
The
most ridiculous endings. Like, just a series of those, and it's just a
inside
joke, a joke on all these people who come.
That would be amazing.
I would love that. That would be balls.
Yeah. So,
or you know what they should do? Right at the end? Just like, don't explain anything. Just say the end. Just end it. Credits.
I was assuming that's what this ending is. Based on a few things I heard.
No, I mean, like, you fire the last shot. You don't even see it hit the guy. And then it just hits the end. And then just ends.
Oh, yeah.
I think you just spoiled the action. I'm not even joking. I'm pretty sure that's similar to what the actual Mass Effect 3 ending is.
Sweet. Looking forward to it.
And I love shit like that, so...
Yeah, I am pretty curious. I mean, if nothing else, it kind of makes you want to play through right to the end of the game, and that's
stay tuned to next episode.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, honestly, I don't know if it's specific to Mass Effect. Like, I don't know if there haven't been any other games that I can think of that had that kind of reaction.
Tell me how many endings you vividly remember as being cool.
Yeah, most video game endings are brutal.
Really? Like, that's the standard, not the exception.
Right.
Like, who gives a shit?
Jesus. You think Call of Duty has a good ending? Not usually.
No.
People don't bitch about that. A lot more people buy that than Mass Effect.
They don't even play the campaign.
Yeah,
that's why.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
All right. So, anyway, I guess we'll jump into...
So while we're in
whoa.
Gears of War, Halo, all these things where they're all the exact same. Even Mass Effect is kind of like this. Okay, there was one race that you thought there was your enemy. Oh, wait, nope. There was this other race that was there too, like the Flood in Halo 1, and like there's two races in Gears of War 3. Like, all these games do the same thing. They just keep introducing new races that become your enemy. Like...
That
no one complains
that
about that.
Badass.
Can't someone just commit to these are the good guys, these are the bad guys, and expand on that through three games? It seems like it's impossible to do that.
George Lucas did it.
Oh my God. Like, the whole... the ideas of story in games are so cliche and so bad. You'd think people would be fighting to have no stories in games. But instead, they feel... I just don't understand people's investment in stories and games. Maybe it's just a personal thing. I don't get caught up in the stories. I get caught up in ideas, visuals, cool ideas, design ideas. Story is usually one of the last reasons I play a game.
Yeah, but...
And that's
I mean,
where it's... I honestly think it's one of the biggest opportunities out there to make a game with a truly great story.
Right. But again, this is... I don't agree with this, but Mass Effect, the series, would be, if people are going to argue that there's great stories in games, a lot of people would point at Mass Effect and say, this is a great...
Well, when we get to Mass Effect 2, I would make the exact opposite point.
I was going to say, like, you could probably skip Mass Effect 2 and just go to 3, and you probably wouldn't miss anything.
You would miss nothing. Honestly, Mass Effect has great characters.
Just think of how
they do
short
not have great stories.
Just think of how short the comic strip from 1 to 3 would be.
Yeah.
One image.
All right. So are we done here? Is this, you guys got everything off your chest? Or?
I'm not sure yet. Give me a minute. I'm good.
So how long is that news section? Like an hour and a half?
No, like 40 men.
40 men. Something like that.
That's not too bad.
All right, so we'll just get right into other things we've been playing. Some of these discussions will be a little longer than others, but I thought maybe we should start with...
Well, I think we should start with Amalur, no? Or is it Alamur or Amalur? I still don't
Amalur?
Know.
Amalur?
Amalur?
Let's start with that, because it was intended to be the review, so we all have things
well,
to say.
That's a good point. Yeah, we all did play this, and some of us got farther than others. I actually, you know, got farther than I expected to. And I still think I might have actually finished it if I didn't start getting into Mass Effect 2, and then I kind of lost interest.
In, I played the shit out of this game for like 4 days, like all day, every day. And then I can't remember. I think Vita came along and
destroyed
stole its thunder.
Right.
But I was really into this game.
It's very surprisingly addictive.
I love it.
Yeah.
To me, this is a game that, this isn't new. Everyone says this. The revolutionary idea is, and really it's not that revolutionary, bringing action combat into an RPG.
Yeah.
And to me, that's not even the biggest success. Where I see the biggest success is how weapons influence your style of combat and how you play the game. So swapping out, you know, bows and
ranged
weapons with magic stuff, like how that changes the whole gameplay experience, and also not being limited at all. So
yeah,
like if you decide later, I kind of want to try not using swords now, you can, and you're not completely fucked.
It only costs you like some money to respec your whole character. And at the end, money is really no object.
Exactly. And I just think this is a game that does nothing annoying. There was nothing that annoyed me about this game.
I'll tell you something annoying.
The maps I thought were good. The inventory system I thought was good. No, very few load times on the menus was a huge thing for me.
Yeah.
I thought anyway. I was never waiting to get in and out of menus. It was really quick. Always telling you where a quest is. Like, not searching, where am I supposed to go? It's like, there you go. It's on a map. I could go to some guide online and find out where I'm supposed to go.
That's huge, especially when the world's so big.
Just tell me where I need to go. I'm a grown man. We know that I could look for, I could comb an area for 2 hours, but it's really not that interesting. I think we all know that at this point. But I would say the weakness for me is the story didn't captivate me, and I still played it because I loved it, but I still couldn't tell you that much about the story at this point. Like, you're fighting an evil king, which to me is almost, it's fine. I don't need a reason to play it as long as it's fun. But
I was going
to
say the same thing. That's almost what bothered me, is that I started off wanting to enjoy the story because I know it was written by R.A. Salvatore, who's a pretty big fantasy guy. I've never read any of his books, but I figured, you know, he's a pretty big name. It'll probably be a good story. But the dialogue was just so heavy, like so much of it. I skipped every single line of dialogue from about the first 15 minutes onward. And I played this game for probably over 50 hours. Like, I played a lot of this game. I got to the end, I beat it. And, that was the one thing I skipped constantly. I could not give a shit about anything people were saying. And I felt like I missed nothing.
Yeah.
I missed absolutely nothing. And, you know,
you still enjoyed it, right?
Yeah. All I know is I died. I came back. I go through the world to get to the bad guy. And, you know, I beat him. Like, that's all I needed.
And I think that's a credit to the story, actually, where I think the failure is, in contrast to what we just talked about with Mass Effect, is that the characters in the world aren't that interesting.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you could get a little, like, even looking, I mean. Do you know what I mean? It's human-looking characters for the most part.
The art style is a little awkward to begin with.
I like it. It's kind of a WoW, WoW hybrid with something else. But, like, in Mass Effect, I don't always care what the dialogue is, but I'm looking at an awesome alien, and the camera style is cool too, right? Like, I don't need to really know what they're saying, but I'm still visually impressed by what's going on. Where this doesn't have that at all, I would say.
Well, I was just going to say, on the topic of the story and stuff, the one thing I actually did like is that they kind of tried to do something a little bit original. Like, yes, it's basically the same fantasy tropes you've seen a million times before, but at least they changed the name of some of the races and kind of had their own little lore in there. Like, there was some stuff that I was like, oh, this is kind of, this is a world I'm not that familiar with. But it did get to be a bit much after a while. There was just so much, so many weird names and just like... Oh,
yeah. That's why you skip all that shit.
And surprisingly, I thought the voice acting was pretty good.
It is pretty good, actually,
so,
for what I listened to.
Yeah. But did you have other stuff to add?
Oh, I got other stuff. I know, like, Frank, you were saying how your thing that drew you in was, like, the combat and the menu system and all that stuff. I'd actually say what most impressed me was the pacing and the level design. I don't know if you noticed, but in every cave you go in, or even the overworld, I found, like, it was kind of like they had a set formula, and it worked really well. The formula was run in the world for, let's say, 10 to 15 seconds, have a little three-man battle. Beat it, run for another 15 seconds, have another three-man battle. So you never got, you didn't run into the Skyrim effect where you're walking for an hour and a half.
Yeah.
You find one wolf, you kill it, and then you walk for another hour and a half. And, you know, you were constantly going back and forth between combat and exploring. And with the sort of like harvesting mechanic of the whatever junk.
Harvesting, the discovering sage, hidden objects, yes. Like all that stuff. There's always stuff everywhere.
Yeah, and I don't know if you guys noticed, but if you ever go into a dungeon where you kind of go out and then come in the same way, they always hide stuff that you would only see coming both ways. So you, even though if you run in, let's say you're running north and then you come back south, if you're running north, there'll be all these sort of like juts out of the cave, and it has all these little like things you can harvest that you can only see when you're running north. And then when you turn around and run back, they have more stuff for you to grab. So it's not just like this big empty cave as you're coming back through.
See, I just like every section of every cave, I like comb it.
Yeah. So if you're doing that, you wouldn't notice it. Yeah. But for me, like I was doing that at first and I was like, fuck this. There's way too much shit everywhere. So I started just booking it through and picking stuff as I go. And then I came back, I noticed that, hey, there's still stuff to do, even though I didn't, you know, fully clear this out on my way in, which was kind of refreshing actually. Cause it, I never felt like, oh fuck, now I got to run all the way back through this cave. Although most of the times they give you a quick out, but you know, when they don't, I felt like it was done really well. Even in the world map, if you notice, like if you go up somewhere and then come back to a town, you'll usually have stuff to pick both ways.
Yeah.
It won't just be this kind of like dead area after you go through it the first time.
And I like the way the map, by doing that same progressions, like constant progression, the world map opens up. Quests you get are usually in a very close area and you're not going across the world back and forth, right? Yeah. Like usually get a bunch of stuff in one area, do that stuff. At some point you've gotten quests. They lead you to what your next area should probably be by seeing where your potential quests are. Yep. Like, okay, I guess it's finally time to go and explore that area.
And that's sort of like the pacing aspect too. It's in the level design. It's really like laid out perfectly for you. And the other thing I thought, the mechanic, I never really used the magic. I was like a half like warrior, half rogue type guy with a sword and a bow. But I found I started using the sneaking a whole lot more near the end of the game, especially on bigger things where you could take them down. And I felt like that mechanic was actually really well done. And then as you do some of the quests, you start doing the pickpocketing quests and stuff, and how, you know, people get pissed at you and then, you know, you got to leave for a few hours or whatever and then come back and they've forgotten. But I thought just like all the like sort of combat related mechanics were really well done, and that the switching of, you know, between melee and ranged really like quick. There's no delay. Yeah. Like it's just like a really good combat game.
The bow and arrow stuff is fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. And how you can like upgrade all those weapons to have different moves and stuff. I thought it was really well done.
I didn't use a bow and arrow. I used those other chakra things that you throw.
Oh, chakra, man.
Yeah, they were pretty awesome.
That's what I mean. There's so many different ways to play.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, as far as the combat stuff goes, like I kind of, a lot of people had said, you know, it's like God of War meets WoW or whatever. And I don't think it's quite that on that level. Like, I think that's maybe a little misleading, but I think it does make up for it in terms of variety of weapons and stuff like that. Like, I don't think the combat system is as deep as God of War, which, I mean, that makes sense. It's, you know, there's so much other stuff in the game, but I just think, you know, I don't think it's quite as...
You could, I don't know.
I'd say it's deeper, but maybe not as polished as
God of
War.
It's deep in the sense that in God of War, you have a bunch of moves with, like, two weapons. In this, there's, like you said, chakras, talismans.
There's probably 15 different weapons.
Daggers, like just classes of weapons that all play differently. So by mixing those up, that's where your depth comes into play, I think.
Yeah, and I would agree. And I mean, also, I'd say I put in maybe about 35 hours. I was maybe halfway through the main quest. There are new abilities you get for each weapon as you start leveling it up. And I may not have seen everything there was to see, like just, you know, in the last 5 hours or so that I had been playing, I was just starting to get into the parrying and all that. I hadn't even used it up to that point. So
I don't think I even used that.
You got, what difficulty did you guys play on?
Probably easy.
Oh my God.
Normal, medium, whatever that is. Yeah.
Don't you guys look at your trophy roadmaps?
not with that game. Yeah, that game is monstrous.
This is a trophy to beat the game on hard. Now you're going to have to start all over again. And hard's not even that hard. Well, you just blew it.
I play whatever the normal intended difficulty level is. And, you know, if you die a bunch of times and they ask you, do you want to switch to easy? I usually say no.
You say no? I find don't. That hard to believe.
Yeah, I was going to say.
We talked about Super Mario 3D where I said, sure, but that doesn't change the difficulty for the entire game. It just helps you get past one level. I don't want to change my experience for it.
You used a silver Tanuki suit.
Yeah.
I don't think I can be your friend.
Frank, I think you said had that last this exact time. Conversation.
Did I? We talked about this last time?
Yeah, we did.
I think you had that exact reaction.
Well,
it's good to see you're consistent.
I guess I forgot.
And you know what? We're still friends, so tough luck. But, I got to say, like, just coming at this game from I hadn't really heard anything about it. And it came out like when, beginning of February, something like that.
Yeah, I think around there, yeah.
And, you know, there was nothing else out. And we were kind of like, oh, what are we going to review for the show? There's nothing out. And then this thing came out. And, you know, the game is called Kingdoms of Amalur Reckoning.
It sounds awful.
I'm like, what the fuck is this game? There's no way. And then it starts getting amazing reviews. And it's like, it's, you know, from the studio that's owned by
Kurt Schilling,
major league pitcher. And, you know, Todd McFarlane, I guess, did some of the
character design, I think, yeah.
And as you mentioned, R.A. Salvatore did the story. So, I mean, that kind of had me interested. But, if this hadn't gotten good reviews, I definitely would not have even given it a second glance.
A lot of people I've been talking to haven't even heard of this game.
Yeah.
I've convinced a few people to pick it up and play it. But it's really, I think if you like Skyrim, Or like God of War, I think you'll like this game.
I like this more than Skyrim, but it's more of a personal thing.
Like, I like exploring the world of Skyrim, but as a whole game experience, I like this more than Skyrim, I think, for me personally.
Me too.
Well, I haven't had a chance to play Skyrim yet. I kind of had hoped I would play a little bit of it and be able to compare, but I can definitely say, like, you know, RPGs for me, I always prefer more action RPGs, and that's definitely what this is. Like, I felt like this was very similar to my experience of playing Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance, except, you know, it's way more stuff to do, much bigger world, you know, better game, generally speaking. But I had the same sort of addictive, kept wanting to play a little bit more and, you know, constantly just, you know, like all the loot, like there's so much stuff. You're always picking up new things, especially if you level up the detect hidden ability or whatever. There's just
get that skill early, that gives you the money.
Yeah, and there's just stuff everywhere, but and it was just fun. Like, there's so many different weapons and you can experiment with all of them, and actually that was a big thing for me, is when I play RPGs, I usually tend to like trying a little bit of everything, and that usually hurts you, right? Because you usually got to pick one thing and just get really good at that one thing, otherwise you're going to end up being screwed by the end. And this one, I was surprised. They actually have a path laid out for you where there's certain classes that are a mix of all three, like warrior, rogue, and mage.
Sorcerer,
or
yeah.
And so like as I was doing that stuff, just kind of naturally picking a bit of each thing, I found myself unlocking this path that they had laid out for me.
Well, they took a retroactive approach, right? So based on whatever you level up.
Yeah, every time you level up, you can...
They created a class that fits everything almost, like the Fates.
Right.
Like essentially give perks to whatever you ended up picking. If you're investing points in diverse things, there's a Fate that gives additional bonuses to that type of player. Right. That would suit them.
Yeah. So every time you level up, you can change that, but it usually is recommending you go here because this is, you know, most suited to your character, which I was surprised that there was something for me. And yeah, I was pleased with that.
And
so.
I like how when you're kind of like upgrading the strength of your weapons, like for the warrior, I think you don't necessarily upgrade like your longsword, your greatsword, your daggers, et cetera, all by themselves. It's kind of lumped into one sort of category. It's like upgrade all your warrior weapons with this. So even if you are kind of experimenting with different weapons, you're not really penalized for picking one over the other.
Yeah, I'm not into games where you have to invest in a specific weapon.
Yeah.
Especially when you know you're something better is going to come along.
Yeah.
It just feels not
And when stuff's getting dropped like every 2 seconds, there's really no need for that. The only I was actually surprised. I didn't run into that many bugs with this game, considering how huge it is. I ran into a few quests I couldn't complete just because of whatever bug. But the only real thing that stood out as a bug to me was the camera. The camera has some issues where it would go on the floor or detach completely, and then I'd have to reset.
I never had that.
I only had that one or two times.
You played it way more,
though. Yeah. But, I mean, a lot of the times when you're doing the whatever the fate charge thing is, I don't know what it's called.
Yeah, I had some bugs with that, actually.
Yeah, like, the camera always goes wonky on that one. That's where I noticed it the most. But surprisingly, like, you know, this is, I don't know, 200-300 quests in it. You know, I only found maybe 3-4 bugs in the whole thing. I'd say that's pretty good for these
interesting
guys.
To point out, it is an EA game, and, you know, EA is the worst company in America. So, you know, but that's one of the reasons people hate them is because they put out buggy games and they put out DLC like that should have been in there from day one or whatever. But
is that, I wouldn't say EA is known for buggy games.
I think that's part of it. I mean, I don't. Okay, maybe not. Is it specifically the DLC thing that people are pissed off about, or what else?
Maybe.
I don't understand the whole thing. I don't know what's going on.
I think part of it is their rumors about how hard they work employees and just whether, I think it's coupled with their.
But that's been around
for years.
That's
older,
years,
though. I think that's been changed mostly. I mean, they still obviously work hard, but
I'm guessing
like what it was.
With a bigger company, more people would know someone who works there that know it's an easier reputation to spread than an indie developer that works its company's hard or works its employees hard.
I guess. I don't know if that's. I don't know. I honestly don't know why
I don't know.
Voted
no
worst
comment.
Probably
because
it was probably all people who hated the Mass Effect 3 ending voted.
probably. But I mean, I just think it's worth pointing out that between this and Mass Effect 3, I mean, they've got two of the best games of the first part of the year, apparently. I mean, I haven't played Mass Effect 3 yet, but so it's good for EA right now, but yeah, I mean, I think this is a surprisingly solid game, and you know, it kind of has all the stuff that you'd like in an MMO, but kind of streamlines it. I was pleasantly surprised that there weren't a ton of, like, I never felt like I was grinding, you know what I mean? There's a lot of side quests. You don't have to do all of them, but I was actually kind of interested in a lot of them, and I, you know, it was never like, go out and kill 10 of these things. You know, there was always sort of a story connected to it, and that was cool.
And they never really made you wander, like, from one side of the map to the other, like you were saying before, Frank. You know, it was kind of like, do something in this general area. You can run there if you want. If you discovered the stuff, it's, you know, you can fast travel. And I think they did a really good job of when you got to, like, a new place, the quests always led you to places you hadn't found yet. So you kind of discovered the map as you did the side quests. So I imagine if you did very little of the side quests, the map you've explored would be a lot smaller than if you did the side quests, unless you ran all around for no reason. But
I mean, the one thing I will say is towards the end, I was kind of trying to concentrate almost strictly on the main quest. And I found that the locations for the main quest were spaced out quite far from each other.
Yeah.
Which was a little frustrating if you just want to do the main quest. Like, they're definitely trying to lay it out so you do some of the side quests along the way, which, you know, is probably for the best. But, you know, if you're just trying to run straight through the game, that's a bit frustrating.
Yeah, I can see that. I noticed that at the end I was doing the same thing in the last area of the game. There's a few side quests, but not many. But the places were really far apart as well. Yeah. And I kind of got frustrated with that, but you can save at any time, which is nice.
Yeah.
And definitely. The saving is awesome. You probably appreciate that, and I, like, in Rage, because you can do it concurrently.
Yeah. Very little annoyed me with this game. Like, nothing annoyed me.
Yeah, for sure.
One thing that, just sort of a random little thing that I thought was kind of a cool touch was, they have these shrines throughout the world.
The lore stones?
not the lore stones, but the shrines that actually give you bonuses. And I don't know if any other games have done that before, but it just kind of, there's a reason to not fast travel, you know, to actually wander around a bit and to actually, you know, just encourage you to explore.
Yeah, because thinking about it, they are always in between fast travel locations.
And that's what I was talking about with the level design. Like, the placement of everything is with purpose. There's not just, like, random shit scattered around. It actually is designed like, okay, you should go down this path if you're doing this quest, so we'll put the stuff here and there and there and, you know, make it, help you get to that point. Yeah. Kind of lead you along the way.
I hardly ever fast traveled unless I was trying to clean up quests in old areas.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. And just smashing stuff is fine. It's not too annoying.
Yeah. That's the good thing about the bow. Just stand and let loose.
I don't do that. God bless Kurt Schilling.
Yeah.
Good man.
Fun my
it's
game.
It's cool to see a sports guy like that, who apparently was a huge, like, WoW nerd, just say, fuck it. And I'm sure he had tons of money to throw at it, right? Like, he didn't care. He's like, I want to make a good game.
That's a pretty cool it's kind way of a to neat, spend your money.
Yeah, it's like. Kind of a neat little hands-on investment.
And I'm guessing was adamant about not releasing the game until it was good, because it started as an MMO, it evolved into this, right? Like, they made sure
they're still doing the MMO.
They could be, right? Like, I'm sure they're all building systems towards bigger things.
I think I heard that this game is like a prequel to the MMO.
Could be.
To explain the whole rebirth thing, or the whatever, come back from the dead thing that this game explains. You were like the first, and apparently in the MMO, everyone can do it.
Oh, okay.
Kind of thing.
Hmm.
That probably makes sense to no one that has not played the game, but.
So, does anybody want to give some star ratings on this one?
I don't feel I'm at a point to give a star rating.
I give it a star rating because I beat it. I'd say I give it a solid 3.5 out of 4.
I would be leaning towards a 3.5 at this point.
That's what I would say. And I think I'd probably played enough that I can safely say that's what it will be by the time I get to the end. And I mean, just the fact that I put in 35 hours, like, honestly,
that's pretty good for you.
I have not put in 35 hours in a game in forever. So,
and that's the weird thing about this game is, like, I know why I'm playing it. I'm playing it because it's fun, but it's weird because there's no story really driving me to play it. Like, the side quests have no story drive at all. It's really about, you have this big ass list of tasks to do and you just want to knock them all off.
Right. Like, WoW's the same way.
Yeah.
There's, like, mini stories within quests, but the story of WoW is almost non-existent. I'm sure some WoW people will be all over me for that, but...
Right.
Welcome to reality.
All right, so that's Kingdoms of Amalur: Reckoning. Any other thoughts? Are we done?
I think we're done.
No.
All right, so, Frank, a lot of people want to get the lowdown on the PlayStation Vita.
Go buy one and buy 12 games like I did if you want to know.
So what's the you're not playing it recently. What's up? Well, are you
this
running
is what
out
I
of
wanted
Steam
to get
or?
In. No. People who know me, I have pockets of obsession where I will only play Xbox games, right?
Right.
And then I'll be like, man, I really love PS3. And I will forget all about the Xbox. I will move to PS3 and I will buy a game that I haven't even touched on PS3 or on Xbox for PS3 just because now I'm a PS3 guy. Right? Like, that's
right.
I just become obsessed. I have an obsessive nature.
Yeah.
So Kingdoms of Amalur got put down because of a building obsession with the Vita.
Right.
So I got the Vita, the first adopters.
Before package. Everyone else.
First we edition
know.
Bundle.
We know.
Which just...
Imagine if there was a Kickstarter for that.
Happened to have a... It really kind of wasn't. Happened to have an exclusive carrying case, which is fantastic.
Hmm.
That okay. You really did miss out on.
Maybe.
Okay. And I played...
He's carrying it in style.
I played a lot. A Vita. A lot.
So 12 games. That's a lot of games to be playing at
one time.
That's
just disc games. I also bought like
some downloadable
games too.
Okay.
Now, to be fair, some of those games I bought, I really haven't played that much. Like, it was too much, but a lot of good deals. There was a buy two, get one free sale at Target that I just was all over that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I bought tons of stuff and I got a free copy of Uncharted with my special pre-edition bundle from Best Buy that you failed to pop on and are still regretting it to this day. So I got lots of free games. I got lots of games, quick finds for cheap games for $30. So I was loving life.
Right.
Just loving it.
Loving yeah. Vita.
So I would say this. The game I played the most is Hot Shots Golf.
I've been hearing a lot of talk about that game,
I loved it on PS3, but there was no trophies, so I didn't play it. So this is a chance to get some trophies and play some golf. It's just a great way to live your life. So I played quite a bit of that, and I do like it. It can be a frustrating game, but trophies a lot of the time, it's like golf. If I fucked up, it's because I choked. I blew it. Only a few times do I think it's the game's fault for misleading me.
That's always good, though, in a game.
So,
but a lot of people complain in reviews, I'm on this challenge, I'm winning, and then on the last hole, I hit one bad shot and I lose. Guess what, buddy? That's golf. Look at little Louis Oosthuizen, the Masters, leading the whole time, double eagle, one of the greatest shots in Masters history, if not the best, in my opinion. Chokes on the last hole, you know?
That's life.
What can you do? That's golf. Golf is life. But yeah, great game. Could not recommend
it. I have never played a Hot Shots Golf game.
Did you play Mario Golf Toadstool Tour, one of the greatest games ever created?
Not Toadstool Tour, but I've played, I think, Mario Golf for
N64.
They pretty much ripped off like Mario Golf and stuff on PlayStation.
So cartoony, not exactly. Tiger Woods.
Doesn't take itself seriously.
I prefer cartoony sports games. I'm on board for that.
You're a cartoony kind of guy.
Yep.
But great game. Lumines, I've played a little bit of. Haven't gotten too into that. Like it quite a bit. What else did I have? FIFA, I got, which is a great.
Does that have cross compatibility? Is that one of those games? Or is it just the baseball?
It's not cross play. Yeah, it's just baseball for now and a couple other things. But the the touch controls for passing and shooting are actually kind of cool. Like picking exactly where you want to shoot, and it's a good game, especially for a portable sports game. I enjoyed it quite a bit. What else here? I barely played Uncharted. It's embarrassing. It's true, though.
Wow.
Because it's a little hard, because I don't want to start on a lower difficulty.
Uh-oh.
But it was mostly because I'm not used to holding a PSP, that Vita yet, right? So I was just wasn't vibing.
So are you saying that the Vita is not designed
I'm used to playing Uncharted on a PlayStation controller.
Right.
And to switch that to this, I was not used to it yet. And I wasn't, to be the first game I played on hard, I was just sucking. So, and I just haven't been back yet. Let's see. I'm just doing the cart games first. The Michael Jackson Experience, which I have to say is awesome.
You have to say that.
Can you expand on the experience?
It's just, it's like a rhythm game, right? But it's like your dance moves are strokes. Like you
stroke it up and down?
Yeah, you stroke the screen up, you stroke it down, and you
stroke
these,
it fast, stroke it
yeah,
slow.
But it's like you get the nice rhythm, you do dual strokes. it's honestly a ton of fun, and it is.
Dual stroke.
It has propelled my appreciation for the song Speed Demon.
To
what I thought would be an unattainable level. Huh. Do you know that song?
I don't.
It's from the Moonwalker movie where he's there's that claymation rabbit riding on the bike.
Oh yeah, right.
You get to dance with the rabbit.
You mean stroke the rabbit?
You dance with
the rabbit. Rabbit strokes you.
And I played a bit of Rayman, but it's the same game. I just wanted
more double the trophies.
Portable version. Onto the PSN games. Gotta talk about Mutant Blobs Attack.
Gotta talk about it.
That game's getting amazing reviews.
Like, I didn't play the first one as much, the About a Blob.
Drinkbox knocked it out of the park.
This one is amazing. Like, the design is leaps and bounds to me better than the previous one. Like, very digestible, replayable. The touch puzzle stuff is awesome. I played this thing, like, beginning to end until I beat it. Killer game. Killer app.
I actually have been playing
it, and it's the cheapest game you can get off the PSN store.
Was it $6.99?
It's what we call a no brainer, folks. Look into it.
So I heard that they did some cool stuff with the touch controls and all.
I just said that. Yeah, you're right. Touch puzzles.
Ooh, getting a little angry.
No, just joking.
Easy.
No. There's some cool, like, especially touch and physics stuff combined. Like, that's your cream dream.
It does sound like a cream dream supreme.
Yeah, you love that. And they nailed it. They fucking nailed it.
Well, when I get a Vita, I will be downloading it.
I'll do it. Super Stardust Delta. I'm a huge fan of the original Super Stardust.
So what's the Delta?
On PSN. You know, it's taken me some time to adjust. I love the game, don't get me wrong.
Not enough 3D.
I'm just so attached to the old Stardust that I'm not fully vibing with this motherfucker yet. You know what I'm saying? But it'll come around. It'll come around. And the other game that I sunk the most amount of time into, which is nothing new. It's been around forever, but for some reason now.
Uh-oh.
More than ever.
I know what it's going to be.
PVZ.
Plants
vs. Zombies.
This game is amazing.
This guy buys a Vita so he can play Plants vs. Zombies.
And it's great. It's great.
So good.
I'm one random trophy away from a platinum. Who knows when I'll get that.
Is it grow the tree to 10,000 feet or whatever crazy it is?
No, man. Mine's like way bigger than that. You have to just randomly get the gifts of plants to fill you with every type of plant.
Oh, yeah.
Who knows when that's going to happen?
Got to play the survival mode, man.
What do you think I'm doing? It's not helping. But overall, I think the Vita is a fantastic value. I love the interface, like the dashboard stuff. I think it's great.
How do you feel about the fact that there's three different ways to close a window?
There is?
I read something somewhere where people were complaining about how it's poor interface design because you can, like, peel back the thing or you can hit the X in the corner or the arrow in the corner. Yeah. And
options, man. They're giving you the option. How is options a problem?
I kind of like the peel back thing. It's pretty cool.
Take the skin and peel it back. Doesn't it make you feel better? I love the interface. I had heard that too. The interface is unintuitive. You can't do the bullshit. It's fantastic. And for $250, I think it's a pretty good deal.
How's the screen quality?
Gorgeous.
Yeah?
We'll be getting into
OLED.
More of that, I guess. So.
We will?
Well, I was in my Vita obsession. Right. When all of a sudden, what comes along? The iPad 3.
Oh.
I didn't
see
know
where this is going.
I didn't know if I was going to get it.
You didn't have an iPad.
No.
As of yet.
But my laptop broke.
Oh, okay.
So I'm like, you got to. Right?
You got to pull the trigger.
No, you don't.
You got it. So no. I did. You got it. You got to, and I did. It's that simple. And to be honest, it's great. But I don't use it all that much. Right?
Like, which is always the complaint about the iPad. It's like, well, what am I going to use it for? It's not a laptop. I have my iPhone for mobile. It's this weird in-between thing.
No, I do use it, like, if I'm sitting around the TV and stuff. But, right. Like,
it's no trophies.
You know, it's great for what it is. I think it's a very adequate laptop replacement, but I got an Apple TV as well. and I'm in the middle of an Apple overhaul.
Interesting.
Going full-blown Apple.
So let me ask you this.
I'll be getting an iMac as soon as they release the new ones.
Oh, God.
Let me ask you this. Are you going to be using Wii U technology before the Wii U actually hits stores?
I don't think so. Why would that be Wii U technology?
Because the iPad 3 with Apple TV use AirPlay. There's going to be games that use AirPlay.
Oh, I haven't even heard about them. You just blew my mind, son.
We talked about this.
I don't listen to you.
Well, it exists. I don't know how many games use it.
Is there any games out yet? Yeah.
Well, there's like few the in game development, I can tell you, but...
Whoa.
I don't know.
Heard it here, folks. So you're telling me the game is on your Apple TV, but you're...
Yes.
Oh my God. Thank God I bought this thing.
Oh yeah.
Is there any out right now?
I don't know. You'd have to look it up. I'm pretty sure there's a few, but
I need to go home.
It's a feature that a lot of games are going to be adding
now.
So let me ask you this. Are you going to buy an iMac, but then boot into Windows?
Never. I'm not a PC gamer. Mm. Rag away, flame away, do what you got to do, people. I don't care. I've come to that point where I've accepted I'm not a PC gamer, and I never will be. So why hang on to this thing and buy Steam games for $3 that I'm never going to touch?
Well, that's where I disagree with you. I'm still going to keep buying them.
Okay. Like, welcome to reality, Knezich. What are you doing? Get your head out of the sand.
Let me ask you, why spend so much money on an iMac when you can buy a desktop for half the price? What are you doing on the iMac?
Looking at an iPad
or iMac.
Well,
he said he's
going to
get
an
iMac.
I just want that huge 27-inch monitor.
You can buy a 47-inch LCD and put it on.
It's the overall
computer.
Aesthetic. Like, I just love the look of it.
You can probably buy a white TV. You know,
you could
probably get a faceplate.
I just like the look of it. I'll tell you what. What really changed everything was the iPhone. Best device I've ever owned in my life.
Change your life.
No problem. I said, you know what? These Apple folks are on to something.
It's called marketing money.
And I'm in.
So have you played any games on the iPad 3?
Yeah, a few.
Sorry, new iPad?
nothing crazy. I'll let you take the reins on draw something and some other stuff. nothing that...
You've been drawing
pretty much just drop 7. On a bigger...
Right.
And...
As always.
I picked up Angry Birds
Space.
Oh, I'm curious
Angry
about
Birds
that.
Which I actually think they've... I just see a trend in mobile games, and they were guilty of this trend, where it was Angry Birds. Angry Birds Seasons. Angry Birds Fall.
Angry Birds Rio.
Sorry, not Rio. That's... And they didn't seem to be that different. From what I haven't played it, I don't know. But this one is a lot different. It's got cool design stuff. Almost to a point of being a problem, though, where I'm thinking too much. Right? Mm. Like, the appeal of Angry Birds is it's dumb, simple fun. I almost have to think too much with this thing. Don't stress me out.
Selling me on it here. Come on.
Tell me more. I'm trying to look at cute birds. Like, don't make me think. Yeah. Okay, so... Then I had a pocket of obsession with the iPad, where I was just getting apps and fucking around with that thing.
Right.
Constantly. And Apple TV, and which led to me starting to re-rip my entire music collection with 1,000 by 1,000 album artwork so that it would look good on the cover flow of the iPad and on the Apple TV music display.
That's a lot of...
So that was my life for 2 weeks. No gaming.
Okay.
Just album artwork. And it's
time consuming.
It's more fun than you think. I've done it 20 times. So I gotta like it a little bit. Then, with all this Kid Icarus buzz everywhere you looked, Kid Icarus this, Kid Icarus that.
I don't know about that.
I went head over heels again for my 3DS. Actually, probably for the first time. And up until last week, I was just 3DS all day, all the time.
All day, all night.
I was just loving everything about it. I fell in love with Nintendo again. I got back into Ocarina of Time. Just finally, not that I didn't like it before, but in today's day and age of huge games like Skyrim and stuff, the design of that game and how they really Hyrule Field is so small that, but in that it's never a chore crossing it or anything like that, but they still have what feels like a fully fleshed out world when there's really not that much there. How they do that is just amazing. Like,
they should go back to that.
I love that game, and I'm still playing it, and it's great on the 3DS. And Kid Icarus, initial impressions were good, not great. Still haven't made love to that puppy yet.
Yeah, I
love the air levels on a first play. Land levels can be frustrating.
Yeah, I don't have too much to say about it because I haven't put a lot of time into it, but you know, like I kept hearing people talking about how it comes with the stand, right? Because the controls are
bonus.
So complicated. And yeah, I mean, like some people were kind of selling it as like, hey, look, you get this extra cool thing. And it's just, you know, like I feel like Nintendo is maybe straying a little bit from what they do best when in the span of a few months, they have to release two separate add-ons for the 3DS to play games like it, you know, the circle pad. I don't like, is that even out yet? I haven't really.
I have one. I bought.
Okay, I haven't seen it anywhere, but I'm sure it would help with Resident Evil. But anyway, I don't know. Playing Kid Icarus with that stand and just the control scheme it works. Yeah, it's outside the box, but it's just like why? I don't get. Why they had to make it so
so crazy? It just like, might work.
It reminds me of trying to play Metroid Prime Hunters, a first-person shooter.
Now that was
with the stylus or whatever. Like you know, they had the little thumb thing you could use. It was so frustrating, and it's just again, it was like Nintendo going off trying to do something that wasn't them. And I kind of feel like maybe that's what Kid Icarus is.
Yeah, but I still got to give them props for that, man.
I don't know. I thought the flying stuff was kind of fun, like you, but I don't know. It's a kind of a disappointment. Like I can't say I was the biggest fan of the original Kid Icarus, but you know the fact that it was sort of a quote unquote Metroidvania type game, and that they were bringing this property back, I was like, oh, what are they going to do with this? This was kind of the game that I bought the 3DS for, and on that level, it doesn't meet expectations, I don't think.
If I ever wanted Dwyer to buy my game, I'd call it a Metroidvania adventure, and he'd be double buying that game.
In this artistic style of Commodore 64.
You got me pegged.
But, Commodore 64, Metroidvania.
It's harder to do than you think. I have a game we'll talk about that you'd think would be up my alley, maybe didn't.
Okay, so I don't want to drone on too long, but find me the built-in software and the puzzle feature.
Do you love this stuff?
This
is a 3DS stuff?
Jay alluded to it. I shake my 3DS day like as much as I can to get these coins. I max
it's
out every
funny.
Day.
It's funny. When you were doing that, it hadn't even crossed my mind that that was a possibility.
Yeah, I know. For some reason, I thought I had to walk with it.
Yeah.
Then when I'm like, I can just shake this. And now I do. And just the feeling of what... First of all, I went to an EB one time. Walked out of there. My little green light's on, street pass. I'm like, holy fuck. Get out there. Three chicks. Hello. Three consecutive female street pass tags. Two more. And it would have been an accomplishment.
Ooh.
Like, that's a good day. They all had puzzle pieces I needed. Started some new puzzles. Like, it's a simple pleasure in life.
You should just go to a playground. Probably get shit done.
Well, me and Papa de Caparich, we went for lunch one day. And I said, let's just take a drive through the high school parking lot. See if we can get a few tags.
Too old.
Bone dry.
Elementary school, that's where it's at.
I don't know. He made a good point because his wife's a teacher. They don't let kids bring those to school.
Oh.
So
they'll smuggle.
You're fucked. I got to find a good place to creep
How can a school outlaw Street Pass? That does.
No, they don't let you bring a video game console.
Yeah, but.
Or any sort of probably electronics.
If you tell them, I can get Street Pass.
That's true.
You don't understand.
And there was a great deal for a day at Walmart, which I sent you. $100 for a 3DS.
Yep.
Only a fool.
They've had some good deals.
Only
Mass
a fool
Effect
like
3,
me would pass
bucks.
It.
Fool. And I also got back into Mario Land 3D, which I love now. I love the size of the levels. I think it's perfect for a portable Mario game. Pushmo, which is a fun little puzzler.
Been playing that?
Yeah. Like it. Not super in love with it or anything. I'm not going to...
It's a clever concept.
Not going to bring it home to mama. But it's good for a poke here and there. Resident Evil Revelations, as I've spelt it here.
As they spelt it on the side of the and, yeah, game case.
Exactly. Does yours have the misspelling?
Yeah.
Me too.
Ooh, collector's edition.
I like it. I love that they treat the ship kind of like the original mansion.
Right.
That is what Resident Evil's all about.
Yeah, it's funny because I had heard previously, I was reading some preview stuff about it, and people kept saying, oh, it's getting back to the roots of Resident Evil. And I didn't understand what they meant by that. I thought they meant like it was the controls were like the old control scheme and all this stuff. And you can open the door if you want. But I think that's what they meant, actually, is that the structure feels like, you know, the original Resident Evil. But the story is between part 4 and 5.
Yeah, I'm honestly not that far, and we got to play some of the multiplayer at some point. But
I love scanning shit, though.
Yeah, I'm a sucker for scanning.
Yeah, and it's, again, Metroid Prime definitely is kind of reminiscent of that. But
I do wish there was a button dedicated to scanning, so I didn't have to switch between my gun and...
Yeah, that would be
that
good.
That gets a little annoying.
So does it work with the circle pad?
Oh, yeah.
And how is it with the circle pad?
Great. I don't know another way. I only know the proper way.
Because I may actually have to invest in one. Just
they're only available
game.
At EB.
Okay. But I think this is the best game. I haven't played a ton of it, but I'd say it's the best game out for the 3DS.
Disagree, but bold statement, Sean.
Okay.
I think Mario 3D is better. I think Ocarina of Time is better.
I like it.
I think Mario Kart 7 is better.
What?
And I think Kid Icarus is better.
Oh, my God.
You love...
You did not just say
seriously,
that.
Seriously, though, you've got a rager for Resident Evil.
I wouldn't necessarily say that. I like Resident Evil 4, like, is one of my favorite games of all time.
That's what I'm talking about.
All the other Resident Evil games, I like Part 5 too, but the early ones, like, I barely even played them, and I'm not even that into them.
All right, and then I played Mutant Muds, which is fantastic.
Good little...
A little difficult.
Side-scrolling.
Yeah. Platform. Classic gaming experience.
Cool.
And, the other two games for PS3, I think you guys are going to bring up, but I will mention... Actually, I'll save the other one for Junk Mail, which it relates to.
Okay.
But to conclude, my pocket obsession has now moved on to PS3.
Yes.
And I'm obsessed with PS3.
So that's where you're at.
Actually,
right,
Journey.
Now.
I played Journey, too.
Ooh, I have not played that yet. Journey. But
which I'm like, you know what? I'm kind of thinking it's a bit overrated. I haven't finished it yet, though, so I'm not going to judge.
You haven't finished yet? I did that baby in one sitting.
I just downloaded it last night at 12 p.m. Okay. So I tried to, but I didn't. But could be a tad overrated. Tune in next time to get the full results.
Or you can tune in to 10 minutes from now when I talk about it. Well, we want Frank's opinion.
Or you can talk about it right now.
Moving on to
All right. So I guess I'll start with Journey. Sure. So I picked that up, and I'm kind of in agreement. I think it's a little overrated. I think, I think it's a great experience. I think people should play it. I think a $15 price point's a little high for the game. I think a 10 would be appropriate. A little $9.99 would be a much better price point for that game. Or even like $7.99, $8.99.
I think it's getting by mostly on art style.
Totally, totally.
And I think Limbo benefited from the same thing too.
And also the like whole brought to you by that the game company who made Flower. And if I hear one more fucking news outlet make a joke about that game company, being like, what game company? That game company. I'm going to fucking slap somebody. Because that joke is so brutal. Anyways,
I heard
little
that joke.
Rant.
It sounds pretty funny, actually.
No, it's shit.
What joke?
That joke.
Oh, God. I'm going to slap you guys.
So, but can you guys explain what it is at all? Because, like, I played a little bit of Flower. I do plan on getting this game, but I agree. I heard that it was, like, a three-hour game. Well, I generally don't judge a game.
I don't have a problem
with
that.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem with that, but when I hear three-hour game, $15,
yeah,
then I start thinking, well, I can wait for it to go on.
My biggest thing so far is the game is just walking around, really, with one kind of jumping, floating mechanic.
Yeah, so have you run into people in the world yet?
No.
You have not.
Oh, other people playing?
Yeah. So essentially, the whole purpose is to go from start to big mountain at the end. That's the game, right? And the whole point of the game is the journey from the point A to point B. But the kind of, you kind of collect little bits and you grow your scarf, which gives you more flying time power. Essentially, that's the game mechanic.
It is.
And you find other random people doing the exact same thing throughout the game as you play. And from my experience, I'll spoiler alert for anyone who doesn't want to shut your ears. But essentially, when I started playing, I was walking around this desert and I kind of like, you know, you start off seeing a guy in the distance and it seems like they're just kind of wandering around aimlessly. I'm like, stupid AI, whatever. I didn't realize, I was like, I guess I could be a guy, but probably not. They're not really doing anything special. And then it kind of evolved from a big area where the two people are kind of just on the other sides doing whatever they do, working towards, you know, building a bridge to get to the next area. And then all your communication is just, there's no typing, there's no talking. It's just kind of like, almost like beeping a horn, essentially, is your only form of communication with them. And as you go further and further along, the levels kind of get narrower and narrower and kind of force you to play side by side. And then there's like one main enemy that comes in that kind of like guides you really together. And it's kind of interesting how the game evolves from you doing it solo to you actually kind of like playing cooperatively with some random online. And, you know, there's little bits hidden. There's little, I don't know what they're called, soul cubes or something. I don't know, hidden throughout the levels. And I found myself and the guy I was playing with, like, if they found one and the other guy didn't see it, you know, you start mashing your button to let them know, like, hey, something's over here, come back, kind of thing. So you kind of work cooperatively towards, you know, working together to find these pieces. And then near the end of the game, I actually, like, lost my buddy. Like, one time I saw him sit down. And I was like, oh, that's weird. He's sitting down. And then I looked, there was an achievement for sitting down for 10 seconds with somebody or something like this. I was like, oh, yeah, right. He's getting this achievement. So I started sitting down. But then he disappears. He actually had quit the game. And then I was by myself. And it was actually like really a strange feeling because I just played probably an hour and a half straight with this assuming same guy. And, you know, we kind of got this sort of like communication system going between us. And then all of a sudden he's gone. I was like, well, what the hell? Now I gotta figure this out by myself.
Totally abandoned, yeah.
Yeah, I was abandoned. And then I get to the next area, and of course it brings in someone else, but they're just like rogue agent up there, like a big jackass, not working with me at all. And then you get to the end, and I've read where some people, you can kind of like lose each other at different points, and there's obviously some sort of cutoff where you can't get a new person to come in to help you. It's kind of like the end of the game. You gotta go solo at a certain point, but I watched this guy kind of like jump off a cliff and then he never came back. And I was like, whoa, what the hell? And I hear if you jump off the cliff, you actually go all the way back to the start. So he was probably pissed when he got put all the way back. But I mean, it's not really anything more I can talk about other than it's almost about your journey from point A to point B and your interaction with the other people in the game.
I think it's a pretty aptly named title, but
yeah, totally.
It just,
and I don't know how it's going to scale later on when less people are playing it or possibly no one's playing it and you're just kind of going solo. Like, if you pick it up on a sale, obviously people will be playing it again. So you'll have a probably similar experience. But if you were to just pick it up randomly, maybe like Frank did, he probably, like, when I finished the game, I think it said I came randomly into contact with like 6 or 8 people. No, I didn't notice 6 or 8 people, but it's kind of interesting that it kind of had hooked you up with that.
I've only seen one other person at a time.
Yeah, so I saw quite a few as like basically constantly while I was playing. I saw at least one person, and maybe that's all. Like you probably when you finish the game, it'll tell you who you kind of ran into. So especially since you played it in, you're going to play it in more than one playthrough. You'll obviously run into at least two people. So
it's a cool idea. Like I can't think of too many other games that have done sort of like this online multiplayer thing where it's under the hood. You don't necessarily know that you're playing with somebody else. Like there was that Mind Jack game.
Well, Demon's Souls is kind of like that too.
Yeah. What, how does it work in Demon's Souls?
Like you see, see souls running around and you can leave notes and read notes. And there's like this feedback loop of,
so you can help other people kind of thing.
But
okay.
Yeah.
But I guess Mind Jack was like, you can take over enemies if somebody else is playing the game, and like it, you could be fighting against AI, or it could be suddenly just some other person will just take over control of it or something.
I guess the test drive game for Xbox 360 was kind of like that too, where there was the hub world island and you would see other people just driving, and those were actually
people,
but you weren't necessarily racing against them or anything. But. Yeah,
cool.
Yeah, I think the only other thing is, like, it's neat to see how, I mean, maybe, I don't know if it'll happen for you, but kind of like how that communication kind of evolves as you're playing with someone for a longer time. I found that pretty neat.
I just avoided them at all costs.
But, I mean, it's kind of neat, and, like, later on in the game, there's an enemy, and it actually, like, hit the guy I was playing with, and I was like, oh, that guy's fucked. Like, I don't know, should I stay and help? Like, I was kind of conflicted as to, like, what I should do. So it was pretty neat, like, from a game that, you know, it's only 3 hours, but to invoke that sort of response to it, I found it was pretty neat, pretty unique. Same with Flower. Flower sort of had the same sort of response to it. So, I mean, that was a pretty, I guess, popular release.
I was a little worried at first when the first thing they show you is to tilt the controller to move the camera.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And I was
yeah.
worried it was going to be all six axis stuff. But thankfully,
it's not that much. Yeah. I just went to using the right stick almost immediately.
Six axis, the worst idea ever.
I guess I'll keep going here. I actually went to my favorite place, the library, picked up Skyward Sword. Played probably about as much as Dwyer did, and then decided that game was enough for me. I think I made it into... See, I think, Frank, you touched on this last time we talked about it. The motion controls pissed me off. I got into the first temple, which is maybe... And I skipped like all dialogue and did as fast as I could, and it probably took me an hour and a half or so. And I got to the first like dangling spider. And I can't remember what you have to do, but I think you have to like swipe sideways and then stab to kill a spider. I don't know, whatever it is. But anyways, whatever you have to do first, if it's swipe sideways, it kept registering that as a stab for me. So I died like 3 times in a row because it wouldn't do what the fuck I wanted it to do. And at that point, I don't know if my batteries were low on my Wiimote or something. At that point, I was like, fuck this. Like, I'm not playing this to figure out how to swing a sword.
Yeah, it's...
I'm playing this. I know I want to swing to the side. But you're the fucking dumb game that's not letting me swing to the side.
It is an absolute shock to me that IGN gave that a 10 out of 10. Like that.
They gave it a 10?
That does not shock me at all.
That is disgusting.
Money hat. Big time.
That's anyways. Bullshit.
Anyways,
that's bullshit, man.
Yeah, that was, I'm done. I'll never pick that game up again. I'm done. I think I'm done with Zelda. In general, unless they make like a radical change or something, back to 2D.
What if they released a high def version of Skyward Sword for the Wii U with completely accurate motion controls?
Probably wouldn't pick it up.
We'll see.
Probably won't even pick up a Wii U
with kickstarted trophy.
Yeah, that's right. I played Mass Effect 2 as everyone else did.
Yeah, I replayed it beginning to end. Platinum that bitch.
So this was actually the first time I had beaten it, but I realized that my last playthrough, I was basically at the end, and then I gave up on it. So I don't really even like this game, actually. I mean, I like it. It's not that good, though. I found that the whole game is basically just you going
recruitment
missions. Yeah. There's no story. There's no point in doing it. Like, why didn't he just get on the fucking horn and be like, yo, we need to save the universe. Everyone come here and then we can go do it. It would have been a 5-minute game. Like, I don't.
There really is no story.
No, there is no story. And I mean, the gameplay, everyone's like raving about the gameplay. I don't know. I think I prefer Mass Effect 1, although it has more bugs.
That's why I'm so shocked with the ending thing, because like, if people are that obsessed about the story of this game, I don't understand why they're so obsessed.
Yeah, I don't
know. And once you get to 3, like, at the beginning, it's like, so, you worked with Cerberus before, eh? And, oh yeah, that was just a one-time thing, a means to an end to stop collectors. It's ridiculous.
That's all they talk
about? That's it. Unless it comes up more later, but it's like, fuck.
Oh, man.
Well, they just reset every time, yeah. And it's...
I'll jump in and give a few thoughts on Mass Effect 2, because I didn't like the first game, and I think I gave it a fair enough shot. I tried a couple times to get into it, and I think it was the Citadel where I just got so bored having to talk to all these people, and there was no action. And on top of it, you know, it is an RPG. It had action elements, but that whole system where it kind of like pauses the action when you get to a fight, so you can choose what you want to do. Like, I know Fallout 3 had that as well, right?
It's different, but yeah.
So both of those systems, I don't know. Something about it just kind of kept me at bay, and I never got really into it. So I wasn't interested in Mass Effect 2 for the longest time. But then people kept telling me slowly, like, you know what? I didn't like Mass Effect 1 either, but Mass Effect 2 is like a totally different game, blah, blah, blah. I was like, okay, maybe. And so finally, you know, had a $15 voucher at Future Shop. It's only $19.99. Mass Effect 3 was on sale at Walmart for $30. I was like, all right, $35 to jump into Mass Effect 2 and 3. Let's give it a shot. And I'm actually really enjoying it. And the funny thing is, like, you know, I did that whole comic book thing that summarizes the first game, and I was just like, I have no clue. Like, they're just a mile a minute whipping through all this story stuff.
It took me 4 playthroughs of Mass Effect 1 to really know every race name and who's who in this universe.
Yeah, and so it's like they're just rattling off all this stuff, and then it's like, who do you want to save? Like, I don't know who either of these people are. That person looks cool, you know? So then I did that, start the game, and I was still kind of thinking, you know what? Like, this is clearly derivative of Battlestar Galactica, Star Trek, blah, blah, blah. It's not very original. The story doesn't seem that good. But then somewhere along the way, like, after a couple hours, I don't know, it must just be the characters.
To me, it's the alien design is the biggest. And to me, it's the best...
It was Morden.
The best sci-fi, like capturing the essence of sci-fi in a video game.
The visuals are amazing.
Yeah.
The characters, you know, you get attached to them even just, you know, even spending 5 minutes with them. Something about them. I don't know what it is. Like, I don't think the dialogue is great, but I think there's this feeling of, like, I don't know, there's a personality there. And yeah, I don't know. I guess the fact that it is a shooter, you can play it as a shooter. I mean, it's very much, they ripped off a lot of stuff from Gears of War. Like, frankly, like, I couldn't even believe that they have the sprint shaky cam thing in there. I was like, what the hell? This is like straight out of Gears of War. But, you know, the cover system thing just works so well. Like games like Uncharted, Gears of War, and it works well here. And I think the feel of the weapons is really good. Yeah, I'm actually really enjoying the game, so I'm pretty hooked on it right now.
I hate the whole weapon system in this one. I mean, the weapons feel good. I hate the ammo. I wish it was just unlimited like in the first one. I don't like having to search around for fucking ammo packs.
But at least it's all
fucking space, man.
At least all weapons use one ammo type.
Was it unlimited in the first one?
Yeah, it was.
Except for heavy weapons?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm pretty sure it was unlimited. I thought there was just a cooldown. I thought you could heat it up, and then there was a cooldown if you shot it too much.
You know what, Andrew? I think you're right.
I think I am, too. I played that game a lot. But also, you know what? I realized after abandoning my first playthrough of Mass Effect 2 and starting... So I have 2 main Mass Effect characters I played through on 1. A male renegade and a female paragon.
Oh, hello.
And I realized I'm female all the way. I can't go back. Like the I'm male
right now.
Femme chef.
The male, the male shepherd. I just can't get into anymore. I just think that the girl voice actor, voice actress, is way better.
Oh, interesting.
Way better. I don't know. I don't know if it's like just how she delivers.
I thought
it
you were gonna say she embodies your spirit.
Well, that too.
I'm kind of surprised, to be honest, that like Mass Effect became this big blockbuster franchise. Like, I guess not as much now that I'm playing Part 2 and I'm realizing they clearly said, okay, we got to make this more like Gears of War, Halo, like the games that sell like
I'll tell you
copies.
Why. EA, marketing money. That's why.
It's definitely tons. Part of it. But like, I'm surprised that...
It's Super Bowl ads.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think so.
But I'm surprised that people who were fans of Part 1, like, I'm surprised more people don't feel the way you do. Because
yeah,
I feel
too.
Like if you're an RPG fan, and if you're a fan of BioWare's games, they stripped out so much of the RPG complexity. And maybe that's why I like it. Maybe that's why it's more appealing to the casual gamer. But it does feel like they dumbed down a lot of stuff.
See, to me, that is my biggest problem with the series, and even jumping to 3. If you look at a game like Halo... They make small tweaks from game to game, but like this feeling of a trilogy is there in that the look and feel is the same across them, right?
Yeah. Right.
With Mass Effect, they make major changes every time going from one to the next. And like it doesn't bother me to the point that I don't play them, but if I was going to have to list my top 3 game trilogies ever, that fact alone... It would be out. It's like changing the aspect ratio from Spider-Man 2 from Spider-Man. Like, there's just... Automatically, you're disqualified. And that's one of the things, so...
Yeah, I don't... Like, even... The weapons in general, how they've changed the weapons, like... I can get over the ammo thing, whatever. I have to spend a little more time searching around for a fucking ammo pack flashing around. Whatever. I think it's stupid. But just the... Like, getting rid of shops... And having to buy weapons and like now you upgrade weapons by scanning planets. Like, I don't know. I just think it's too dumbed down for me. I mean, it's fine.
And you'll notice they react to that now with Mass Effect 3.
Oh,
and try
right?
to find
some sort of like skill tree now or something, right?
Kind of, yeah. And there's also like the way you upgrade weapons is a little more RPG-ish. Like they have a weight and you could carry less weapons. And
oh,
be
God. I'm going to.
Just
oh
chill, man. Just give it a chance. You haven't even played it yet.
I'm going to give it a chance. Don't
but
worry.
I will
save it for next show.
I played number 2 on Insanity to get the Platinum. And Insanity is not a good time. Like, it just stretches out this game to the point where the combat becomes so repetitive and annoying. And like towards the end when I was trying to level up, once I beat the game, I switched back to casual and normal. And like it was... A reminder of like why I loved it to begin with. Like it's pretty fast paced.
I think I played on normal.
Yeah,
and I even found some of the bosses tricky.
Yeah, it's
on normal. I can't even imagine on Insanity. I mean, I did it on Mass Effect 1 with not too much difficulty because you can level up to reasonable.
I did want to say because the PS2 one's an amazing deal right now because it's $20 and it comes with all the DLC from the Xbox. And I was actually really impressed with the DLC in this game, or what was DLC for the Xbox, particularly the Lair of the Shadow Broker.
I've heard those are good. I'm picking
and
them up.
The other Project
is
Overlord.
Is it Ascension? Oh, is Ascension from the first one?
I think, I don't know what that one is. Mm. But they were great. Like, they were not a chore at all compared to the DLC for the first Mass Effect, which I would say was a chore.
Interesting. But,
I also bought the Arrival DLC, which was
Arrival. That's what I said.
You'll love the Project Overlord.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Virtual intelligence taking over a station. It's like
nice.
You're gonna love it.
Has anybody played the Mass Effect iPad game that they put out recently?
No, but I hear you can get experience perks for tying it to your account.
I'm kind of curious because it's by the same guys who did the Dead Space one, and I thought that one was pretty good.
I'm interested about the multiplayer in Mass Effect 3.
Did you get PS3?
No, I got Xbox, and I don't have a gold account, so...
Oh, man, we got PS3s, man.
Well, shut up,
Did you open it yet?
Yeah. Well, What? You think I'm going to waste my 150 hours I spent on the first two games not to import my character?
So you got to start over like I did. Now we're
I got my FemShep, man. It's my FemShep.
You can make a new FemShep.
No, I can't.
And improve on all the things that went wrong.
Nothing went wrong.
Oh, now me and Sean, we're going to be playing multiplayer.
I am looking forward to the multiplayer.
You won't even be able to play multiplayer.
Ooh, I don't care.
I thought you weren't supporting Microsoft ever.
It's the only game I bought for my Xbox in
well,
like 3 years.
Well, because Mass Effect came out first.
Yeah, that's
Xbox,
right. I'm sticking with it just for this.
And I am now fully committed to PS3.
Okay.
Balls deep.
It's about time.
All right, so what else you got on your list there?
It's a long list. I guess I'll do this one now. I took advantage of the free SWTOR? How the hell do you say it? Star Wars Old Republic weekend. I was like, all right, I've never played WoW. I don't think I've ever played. I think I downloaded Lord of the Rings Online when it went for free. Never actually played it. So this was kind of like my first foray, other than DC Universe that we played a bit of,
right,
into like a PC RPG. And really, I played not very long. I think I played for 2 hours, maybe. So definitely didn't really take advantage of the free weekend. But the story aspects are neat. It's like a BioWare story game. But I would not pay $15 a month or whatever it is to play this because I don't play with anyone. I don't know anybody. I didn't see any of the like guild shit going on. The only thing that happened was I got killed a bunch. And, you know, I don't know. I was like not doing the side missions because I wanted to try to get through as much of the story as I could.
Every time
I got my ass kicked.
I've attempted to get back into WoW several times, and every time my understanding gets a bit better.
Yeah.
I can't wait. I rebought 1 and 2 Lich King and Burning Crusade, or not Cataclysm. I bought them all. Yeah. And once I get that iMac, I'm all over.
Yeah. I don't know. I can't bring myself. That was enough. That was a nice little taste. And let the little sour taste. I'm done. I'm done.
Nice little taste for the sour taste.
I'll do some quick games. I played a couple Pixel Junk games, actually. I picked up Pixel Junk Monsters.
Great. Love it.
Yeah. It's pretty fucking hard, though. Like, yeah. I'm playing with my wife, and we're loving it. But, I mean, anything over easy, we're kind of struggling with at this time.
It's killer though.
And I picked up
Eden. Please say Eden.
No.
Oh, Eden's my favorite.
Shooter 2.
Played Shooter 1. I bought Shooter 2
when it was on sale like a few months ago, and I hadn't really picked it up, and I'm enjoying it. I don't know how far I'm in it. Probably not very far.
I can't recommend Eden, Pixel Junk Eden, enough.
Yeah, I have the
steep
demo.
Learning curve.
What is that one?
That's where you're like this
spiral thing,
like
right?
You're like a wisp, and you attach to things and make spinnies.
Is that a technical term?
It is so good.
It sounds divine.
We'll get into the junk mail. There's a junk mail relating to what I was going to say.
So I downloaded Shift 2 Unleashed, which just went free. It's like a full game on PSN for PSN Plus members. It's like a racing game by EA. I think it was Need for Speed Shift.
The whole
originally.
Game is free?
Yeah, like 10 gigs.
So I just upgraded my hard drive to 500 gig.
Ooh, that's a good call.
It was a great idea.
I am running low. I have to be deleting stuff pretty soon.
Yeah, I hate that.
I have to monitor my fucking game data all the time.
God.
Yeah.
Just
you know what I need to do? I just need to uninstall GTA 5, and then I'd probably get about 80 gigs back.
Why do that, though? Just take the plunge.
Yeah, get a big dog.
Yeah, get yourself a nice Western Digital Scorpio Blue. 500 gigabyte, if it's $80.
Yeah,
never worry
thinking about
again.
It. Thinking about it. But so I downloaded this game. I was like, I could go for a racing game. I picked it up, and I realized I like GTA 5 better than this game. There's just something weird about the... I don't know if it was the
GTA
settings.
GTA 5?
Sorry, Gran Turismo. Okay. GT 5. That's what I meant to say. But there's something about the driving. I don't know if I had like steering assist or brake assist. I know I had brake assist on, which is a big mistake, but... I think I had some sort of steering assist on, which was really fucking up my concept of what I think should be doing. So anyways, I uninstalled this game almost immediately and then threw in GT 5 and started playing that. And it's pretty good.
I got to play some more of that in 3D, man.
Oh, yeah. You should.
Oh, yeah.
So I'll do another. I threw in Sly 2. Sly collection.
I've also played some Sly 2. It is a big drop. Like, Sly 1 is so much better.
I'm kind of enjoying it, the whole, like, switch character thing. I'm not very far. I think I'm 20% through the game. But I had never played any of the Slys. I played Sly 1, like, a lot when I got the collection, and then I was kind of slide out, I didn't start 2. But now that I've started 2, it's kind of like it was a good waiting period. So I'm back into the Sly. I'm liking it. I felt the need to play a shooter. I popped in Call of Duty 3. Not Modern Warfare.
Three.
Wow.
That's a Treyarch.
And I,
too.
That is. And I popped in the hardest mode because I didn't have all the achievements. I was like, oh, I'll give it a whirl. I am getting my ass handed to me. I think I'm like at the second stage and just dying
It's just the most frustrating experience.
I mean, I like the World War II setting a lot and I'm enjoying it, but I'm just getting my ass handed to me in some spots. On the same shooter
War is
thing.
Hell. War is hell.
Yeah, that's right. On the same shooter note, I downloaded Far Cry 2, which was also free on PSN. And I never played any of the Far Cry games, never had played this before. And it's a little bit of a learning curve because they don't give you a map that's easily accessible or a radar of where the enemies are. So you'll just start getting shot. You don't really know where anyone is because there's long grass and the guys are kind of dressed like grass. So you're kind of just like spinning in circles, just trying to find where the guy's shooting you from. Because the indicators on the HUD, like if they hit you with a direct shot, it kind of goes red all around. So you don't really know where he's shooting you from. I haven't put too much time into it, maybe 3 hours or so. But I'm getting kind of more into it and liking it kind of more and more. I don't know if I'll play through a lot, but it might be a game I pick up from time to time just when I'm feeling like a shooter and play another mission.
Huck is a testament here. I gotta say this for a gamer out there, you know,
I try a lot of shit.
No. You don't have a lot of cash. Yeah. You get a PS3 for like, I don't know, $200.
Oh,
a PlayStation Plus year membership.
I'm loving my Plus
for 50.
Membership.
And a library card? You're good
yeah.
to go.
Hell
you're
yeah,
life
man.
You're a lifetime gamer.
Pretty much.
Damn right,
like,
man.
Just think about it. That's all I'm saying. Give it a thought.
That's all hey. Gotta
I think it's impressive.
I play a lot of free games.
Don't blame me, man. That's awesome. What about Tomb Raider Underworld?
Oh, you know what? I did download that and I played it for a bit and I played it though, so I bought a 3-month PSN thing because I wasn't too sure. And then I got Underworld and it my 3-month expired and it was telling me I can't play the game anymore. So I got the year. And then when I went to play it, it still was telling me it was expired. So I was like, fuck. And I uninstalled it. And then some of the other games that I hadn't uninstalled started working like a couple days later.
You can re-download it.
I can't. No, I tried.
No, if you download it, if you go to your past down, you have to go to your past downloads.
Okay, I'll give it a whirl. But I was disappointed with that I deleted it. But
that is a pretty annoying thing.
Maybe they have it at the library.
They might have it at the library, yeah. I'll check.
Library.
So I have one thing to bitch about, though. I talked about it a bit last week. Topspin 4. All right, we're going back.
Topspin 4.
Yeah, tennis we're talking.
Wow.
Gotcha.
So this game was released digitally recently for $29.99 on PSN. So I'm
digity all the way.
Yeah, so I'm like, okay, great. This will drive down the price on eBay. No. People on eBay are retarded. I'm not going to pay $36 plus shipping to buy a game that's $30 digital. Honestly, when will people smarten up and lower their eBay prices?
I think it's just people in... Oh, like that's their base price?
Yeah, or that's what the price is up to now. Yeah. Either. I'm just like, what the fuck?
And you can't find it used anywhere else?
Oh, I haven't really looked around. I just brought it up quick. That's all I wanted to say.
I had a genuine complaint with
just
the game.
I was just thinking about it earlier today.
No digity.
So the big other game I played, which I know you guys have not played and probably no one else has played, is Binary Domain, released by Sega. This game is
good
the fucking
Sega.
Shit. I love it.
Sega needs some of that EA marketing money.
I need to play this Binary Domain.
Yeah, so this is kind of like Gears 3, or I haven't played Gears 3, Gears in general meets Snatcher. If you guys have played that, it's kind of like...
I haven't played Snatcher.
I'm familiar. Or Blade Runner. Let's say Blade Runner. Basically Blade Runner. And the story is actually... oh, I said the magic word.
Fly Guy's eyes are wide open.
So, I mean, the gameplay is awesome. It's quite good. And the combat is not like Gears where... you know, you can kind of switch, you have your main weapon or whatever, you kind of get your pistol and whatever. In this, your character has one main type of gun and no one else has that type of gun, and you kind of upgrade everyone's primary weapon. So everyone has a different primary weapon, all your teammates, and they all do different things. They have like long range sniper, you know, run and gun guy, demolition guy, whatever. And it's kind of neat to upgrade their individual weapons, and then you have another upgrade. They call it nanotech or something. It's basically like a little equipment slot, and you kind of, there's a little, like, little mini game to fit as much as you can based on what you've bought. That's pretty neat. I thought that was pretty fun. Lots of big, like, movie set pieces, which really, like, break up the action really nice. You're never really, like, just wandering down a aimless hall for too long. The bosses are probably one of the best bosses I've ever played. Just their design is awesome. I can't say enough. The story's good. I mean, it's not great. It's pretty predictable once you get into it, but overall it's good. The characters though are, I think, what drive this game. There's a lot of like corny, sort of like Gears of War-esque dialogue, but by the end of the game, they're making fun of it. So you kind of see how, you know, they took the typical characters and then the atypical characters make fun of the typical characters for saying all the stupid shit. So it kind of makes up for it in the end. And all I have to say is the best character is a French robot. Amazing. Nice. Amazing.
I just threw up in my
So good.
So, but this game just came out like a month or two ago, right?
Yeah, it did. I don't know how long ago.
Yeah,
it's really flying under the radar. I don't even know if I've seen that many reviews for it, actually.
I'm popping on the Metacritic right now as we speak.
Yeah, the only reason I found it is because it came on...
74.
Came on PSN demo. I gave the demo a try and actually really liked it. So I gave it a full-blown purchase and not disappointed at all. Although I couldn't find it in my local feature shop. They didn't carry it. I had to order it online.
Very interesting.
So, obviously, it's not getting a lot of distribution. The combat's awesome. The AI is really cool, too. How it works is you only fight robots, and what you have to do is you kind of, like, blow off their armor, and then you blow off limbs. So, if you blow off their legs, they start, like, crawling towards you like the Terminator. Or if you blow off an arm, then, like, you know, they might only shoot. If you shoot them in the head... then they don't know who's who, so they just start shooting their own characters.
Ironically, I'm reading the GameSpot one-liner from Metacritic. The intriguing world of Binary Domain rises above its conventional appearance, thanks to the satisfaction of shooting robots to pieces.
It's really neat. It's really fun, actually, to just blow them away. And the AI, too, behind the cover system is really good. Like, it's pretty similar to Rage, how... there's a lot of variety. They don't always pop out of the same.
Now we're getting into Hulk's wheelhouse.
That's right. But there's no... The enemies, they switch it up so often that it doesn't feel like you're just playing some, you know, AI character in a game. They do a good job of breaking it out. And the only bug I found with the game, actually, was... I think I had one freeze. But... the only bad thing is I like to play, now that voice acting's gotten so good, I like to play with subtitles off. And the problem is that some of the cutscenes are in Japanese and they don't put subtitles on if the dialogue's in Japanese. So the first, I don't know, one third or two thirds of the game or half of the game, every cutscene that was in Japanese, I had no idea what was going on because, you know, there's no subtitles. So I couldn't read what they were saying. Good on the cutscene. I could still kind of make out what they're doing, even though they were just speaking
Touch language. Japanese.
Yeah, yeah. Anyways, yeah. I'm going to give this game a score. I'm going to give it a 4 out of 4.
Oh my! This guy's on the payroll, man.
I'm on the payroll. Sega's got me back pocket.
But you know what you need to play next, which I said I was going to play two episodes
Yakuza
ago.
These guys made Yakuza, by the way.
Shit, no, man. I was going to say Bayonetta and Vanquish. Also Vanquish, Sega published.
I do want to play Vanquish.
You know, I think it sounds a little bit like Vanquish.
I'm going to throw this out there. Sega is not getting a lot of love these days.
No, they're not.
They're going out of business, man.
Well, I think we
turn around for them.
No, no. We devote this podcast only to new Sega games. Just putting it out there.
This one right now?
No. For the future of Game Junk.
We just need to contact Sega and get some licensing.
Sega needs a pusher, man. I think I know
Dwight was talking about playing some Vanquish, so maybe we should play Vanquish, Bayonetta.
Aliens, that alien game you bought.
Aliens Infestation.
Let's just keep it simple, Sega. Sonic Generations. Hello?
But yeah, these guys made Yakuza, and I've never played a Yakuza game.
I bought it for like $5 at the Blockbuster.
I'm kind of thinking of maybe going back and playing that. Although I know it's not a third person shooter like Binary Domain is, but
do it.
Overall, awesome game. Everyone should pick it up. Or at least try the demo, see if you like it. But the demo is pretty representative of the game as a whole. So trust the demo. If you like the demo, you'll like the game.
Now, if you get those, that's like one of those hour-long PlayStation Plus demos, right?
No, it's a normal section of the game. I think it's the second section of the game.
I'm just worried it's going to install the trophies. And then if I don't get any trophies, I'll, you know.
I don't know.
No?
I don't follow that shit.
Okay.
So the only other game I've been playing, which is kind of a shame plug, but I've been playing a game called Waveform on PC only off Steam. And I did have a little bit of a hand in making it, not too much. Mostly my buddy Ryan did all of it over the course of 3 years. So we all worked with him at Silicon Knights. So just giving him a little plug. Game's awesome, over 100 levels. It's like a weird kind of action puzzler, I'd say, where you control a wave of light and you manipulate the amplitude wavelength and of the light to sort of match up to these balls and other random things through a level, and overall, like, tons and tons of gameplay. I think it's $6.99 or $7.99 on Steam. $6.99 maybe.
It's pretty cheap. Yeah. Can't afford not to buy it.
Yeah, but I mean, there's over 100 levels and there's endless modes for Steam leaderboards for every sort of like area. So essentially you travel through the solar system. So you start at Pluto, go to whatever, Neptune, Uranus, all the way into the sun. The sun's the last level. So yeah, it's fun. I like it.
Can't wait. I haven't popped that.
Might be biased, but
I've been playing a bit of it. And it is actually pretty impressive. Like, it's the kind of game that I think you might see some screenshots or videos and not really think that much of it. But it's like when you play it, like, it clicks at a certain point. And it really, you get into the flow of like just moving this wave up and down and sort of stretching it out. And I don't know, I was pretty impressed with, like, you know, I think I've only played through one system or one planet or whatever it is. But like, I was impressed with all the little twists he's put on that simple premise.
Yeah, the design is really good. And some people are complaining that, oh, I can't get 100% in a level. And the whole point of it is not to get 100% in a level. It's to play it once, be able to beat the level and move on, and then come back later and sort of become a master at it. And I mean, I can't master levels, and I've played the game a lot. So, I mean, it does take quite a bit of mastery.
I saw Ryan do a demo once.
Yeah, Ryan can crush it. Ryan's pretty fucking good now. But, I mean, that's what 3 years of playing it gets you. But, I mean, he definitely is skilled at playing, and he put a lot of time and love into it, and it shows. The game looks great, and the audio is a big selling feature. A guy Ryan worked with at Next Level Games did all the audio for it. I think his name's Scott McIntyre, I believe. And he did a great job. And it was nominated for Best Design at Indie Festival. So, I mean, it's getting some notice, but, you know, we don't have any marketing money behind it. So it's hard.
Yeah, you know, the one thing that I will say is that I kind of wish it was available for iPhone and iPad, because it almost makes more sense, the interface, because all you need to do is slide something up, down, left, and right. And
totally.
to do it with the mouse is a little bit difficult compared to that. But I don't know. I saw somebody else comment on that, and I think Ryan replied to a comment on a site somewhere and said that he didn't think it would work because it didn't have the analog sensitivity that he wanted or something. I don't quite understand
I don't
what
know.
He was saying. But
maybe he said that, but the plan is to port it.
Yeah.
And actually, we had a failed Kickstarter. And the whole point of that Kickstarter was to raise $8,000 to help fund the porting
right.
to iOS and Android. And it failed. So it's kind of like put back our plans on that. But we have like been in contact with people that'll help port it and stuff. So we're hoping to get it out there eventually. It's just, I mean, everyone says that. Everyone that plays it says this would be perfect on iOS. And it does make perfect sense.
Did he decide, change his mind and move to tablet once Nintendo Wii U had a tablet controller?
Most likely.
He's a diehard Nintendo. Oh,
yeah. Massive.
He refuses to buy any other system but Nintendo systems.
Yeah. But, I mean, maybe that was part of his thing. I don't know. I can't really talk too much about the Nintendo aspect of it. Yeah, there are other platforms we're planning on bringing it to. And there's DLC Ryan's planning, so he's put a lot of work into fixing bugs already. So some people are having bugs with it, and he's already jumped all over it. So, I mean, he's supporting the game. It's going to be out there. I mean, this is baby, so go pick it up.
F equals sine of X.
Right.
Fix that bug up.
Right? Yeah, you had a coast.
You want to use sine.
Not coast.
All right. So is that it for you then?
Yeah, that's it.
All right.
What about a game using the tan function?
Ooh.
Actually, that's you know what's funny? I don't know if you must have heard something about this, but there were some people accusing him of ripping off the idea from another game.
Yeah.
It's called like Sign Car or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I can address that a little if you want.
Well, I read his blog post on it and stuff, but I actually checked out that Sign Car game and I was like, this is not that similar. Like, okay, they both have sine waves, but other than that, it's not that similar.
And the sign game, Ryan addressed it, but if you look at the original demos, Ryan's actually came out before his.
Right.
Not that the guy would have seen Ryan's or vice versa. I mean, Ryan's whole point is like, it just happened to be developed side by side. And if you look at what Ryan has shipped now, there's no way that he saw, I can't remember the guy's name, but I think he put his demo out in late 2010. There's no way that Ryan would have been able to rip off that idea and then put the polish into Waveform that he did by himself in under a year. I mean, it's just not possible unless he was working a full time, which he wasn't.
Yeah.
So, I mean, people are saying that they're accusing him of that, but it's totally unfounded.
Yeah. It's just, it's funny because there's so many games that are based on similar ideas and it's like this indie game comes out that's pretty original and people just right away point at one thing and they're like, oh, it's like that. And it's like, are you kidding me? Like, there's so many games that rip off other games.
And I think all they see is that initial, like, sine wave and then they see some, like, dots and they're like, oh, it copied it. But, I mean, the depth of gameplay and waveform, there's so many more features to it than just, I mean, that other sine car game, I think is just avoiding obstacles, right?
Yeah.
I don't think there's much else to that demo.
It's a very simple game.
Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, people are haters.
Yeah. All right, I'm going to blow through a few other games here. Picked up a PSN game called Closure, which was previously, I think you can play, there's a Flash version that you can play online for free, but this is like an expanded and more polished version. And the basic idea, it's a platformer, black and white, looks kind of like Limbo, but the idea is that you manipulate light. Anything that's in darkness does not exist. So the idea is, like, you know, you might need to get from one side of the room to the other and you've got a wall there. Well, if you move the light so it's not on the wall anymore, that wall doesn't exist, so you can walk past it. But the problem is you might move that light and suddenly, you know, the floor you were standing on is no longer there either, so then you fall through and you die. So it's a really like one of these games where it's like it takes a while to start thinking in terms of
total mind fuck.
I was waiting for it.
But
Dwyer has to have at least one game where he has to say mind fuck every
It is a mind fuck, and it is definitely my kind of game. But I was surprised how hard it gets early on. Like, I've not played that much, and I'm already getting pretty stumped on a lot of the levels. So I don't know, but it's a really cool idea. Definitely recommend checking that out.
That's Dwight's time to check out.
Yep.
When the going gets tough, Dwight gets going.
When it comes to puzzles, I actually put a lot of time into that. When it's like skill based, I'm like, fuck it. But when it's a puzzle, I'll give it a lot of time. But I also have been playing Payday the Heist.
Really?
Yeah, have either of you guys...
That was like free on Steam or something, right?
They had like a free weekend, and then it was on sale on Steam for a while.
Okay.
It's also out on PSN.
Are you playing on Steam or on PSN?
Playing on Steam. Bunch of people at work all downloaded it. And, you know, mainly I was interested in the game when it first came out.
It's Left 4 Dead with bank robberies. Summary.
And so the idea is like, well, you know, I wanted to play it, but I wanted to play it with a few people that I knew, which is, you know, obviously how Left 4 Dead is kind of the most fun. And I mean, it is very much like, if you like Left 4 Dead, if you're looking for something a little different, it's got the same addictive feel. And like, even I was kind of thinking, like, what can you do with a bank robbery to sort of make a level progress and to put obstacles in your way? And I was surprised at all the stuff they came up with. Like, there's, you know, like the
roadblock.
No. Like the one level you go
cops
on, you go into a bank and it's cops. Like, okay, you've got to
they shut off the alarm.
No,
the money explodes.
Someone is against this game.
Easy. Oh, I'm just joking. They you go in and first you got to find the bank manager.
One of your teammates turns on you and they make you do the gameplay of being the teammate that turns on the rest and tries to take the money.
Shut up.
Am I close?
No, it's Left 4 Dead, but, you know, they don't change the gameplay like that. There's no story or anything like that. But I'm just saying the different tasks you have to accomplish to actually pull it off. It's like, get the bank manager, get the key, go upstairs, get, like, you know, a drill that somebody had planted there beforehand. Now you got to put the drill on the safe, but you start it running and it'll jam every now and then. So you got to keep making sure that it's there. But then now there's SWAT guys like coming down on lines through the skylight, or like police coming in through the front door. And if you take out surveillance cameras, there's less cops because they can't see you, what you're doing. And there's just a lot of things that I was like, oh, okay, this actually has a lot of depth.
Can you take hostages?
Yeah. And actually what you can do is if one of your guys gets killed or captured by the cops, you can take a hostage and trade it for your buddy to get him back. So that's kind of cool.
That is cool.
But they have a lot of levels that are basically based on familiar movie scenarios. Like, one is basically Heat. Another one is, I think, pretty much modeled after the Dark Knight robbery at the beginning. And then there's a couple others. I can't remember what they all are right now. But
any from The Town?
I don't think so.
I think the if I remember the artwork, though, they're all wearing like masks.
Everybody has
kind of
a
ripoff of The Town.
Yeah. But I mean,
or Point Break.
Yeah, there's been a lot of bank robbery movies with masks. But yeah, I don't know. Again, it's like, I think when it first came out, it was probably overshadowed. It was like November of last year when, you know, every other big release is out. So this is, you know, something that maybe people will discover a little bit.
I actually thought it was a lot older. I didn't even know when it came out.
No, I don't think it's that.
I don't
old.
Like. I didn't know. I saw it. I think I saw you playing it one day. And it was the week of the free trial, so I was like, oh, I'll give it a try. And then it took so long to download that by the time I actually got around to doing it, the free weekend was over, and I was like, well, that was a big waste of my time.
Yeah, but, I mean, if it goes on sale again or something, it's definitely worth checking out. And I'll go with just a couple iOS things. Got to talk about Draw Something. Huge game, sweeping the nation.
Big time.
It's basically Pictionary.
Sweeping people's pocketbooks.
The weird thing about the game is, like, you know, I think the draw to it, no pun intended, is the fact that it records how you drew something.
Well, it's interesting to see how people...
Right. Like, That's part of the fun of Pictionary in real life. And I think there have been other drawing games like this that, you know, have been
done. I learned stuff about Sean.
Right.
Like, I learned that for some reason, when he draws Darth Maul, he doesn't put both ends of the lightsaber, like, which makes no sense.
Right. But, you know, it is an interesting thing, because you can take advantage of the fact that if you draw things in a certain order and then point at something, you know, that has a little bit of meaning, as opposed to if somebody just had a picture load up and they had to, like, decipher what that picture is. So that's kind of cool. And then, like, as you're watching somebody else's picture come up, you can guess, and it's kind of like, you know, guess as quickly as you can. And then when they get your, it's an asynchronous game. So, like, you know, you can play at your own pace. You know, you send somebody a picture, and then you wait a couple hours, somebody will send it back. When you get it sent back to you, you get to watch them as they were guessing your picture. So there's this whole kind of, you get the full experience of what Pictionary is without being there in person. So I think it's pretty clever, actually. But you're enjoying it?
Yeah. It's good.
I don't know. I mean, I can see myself getting bored of it.
I'm starting to get sick of it.
It's
a good game on the shitter.
I think you can buy word packs, but I've been seeing a lot of repetition of the same words coming up a lot. And the other thing, I mean, I don't play with anybody I don't know, but I know Alicia plays with, like, tons of random people, and there's a lot of people in the game who just write words. Like, they don't even try, and it's really frustrating and pointless. Like, why even bother playing? So, but yeah, I think it's worthy of the current popularity. I don't know if I see it lasting, but it's worth checking out. I downloaded Ghost Trick Phantom Detective, which was a DS game. They re-released it on iOS a month or two ago. Kind of wanted to check this out, because I know it's sort of a, it's kind of in between, like, a text adventure and, like, a puzzle game. But the idea is you're a ghost, and you can manipulate objects in the world to, you know, basically save people's lives or whatever. And there's, like, a story to it. And, you know, there's actually a lot of text and dialogue to get through, which I kind of found, it was a bit much, but it was kind of, there's a sense of humor to it that I actually didn't mind. But the cool thing is the puzzle element of it. It's almost like this giant Rube Goldberg thing where it's like, you got to hit this thing and it makes this happen. And, like, things have to be done in a certain order. And if it doesn't work out, then you got to start over again. And things get pretty complicated pretty quickly. So it's definitely an interesting idea. Not really like anything I've played before. Worth checking out as well. Last thing I'm going to mention. Here's a game that should have been right up my alley. I was kind of excited about it. This is actually a Kickstarter project that I don't understand.
Did you fund it?
I didn't. Oh. And I think the game may have already been done, but they were trying to get funding to do more with it or something. Like, the idea is they're releasing it in chapters or something, but the game's called Saturday Morning RPG. You guys heard of this? No?
Nope.
So somebody came up with this idea of let's imagine a world that's based on all the cartoons we used to watch in the 80s on Saturday morning and sort of mash it up and make a fun RPG out of it. And so you're playing a main character who's named Marty. The bad guy, the main villain, is Commander Hood. Looks very much like Cobra Commander. You know, you've got references.
What's the significance of Marty?
Back to the Future.
Oh, yeah. Like, what
you've got
I thought it was based on cartoons.
Well, it's 80s. Anything 80s. Okay.
Wasn't there a Back to the Future cartoon? No.
Maybe, but wasn't that beloved?
There was. So, you know, it's sort of like this. There's all these references and inside jokes to all these things. And, you know, you have your spell book, as it were, is actually a trapper keeper binder, things like this. And it actually is kind of like Costume Quest, like the battle system.
I was thinking it's probably was inspired by Costume Quest.
I think it was, at least to some extent. And, like, you know, it has the sort of mini game elements of, like, certain weapons and stuff. You have to, there's timing to attack and stuff like that. There are also scratch and sniff stickers that power you up before each battle.
It kind of bothers me that, like, these things are close approximations to Saturday morning. Like, you know what I mean?
Well, that's one of the things I was going to say. It would be amazing if they actually had the license to all these things, but they don't. So they kind of have to turn into this.
I'd rather they just picked one universe and got a license for it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. But, so anyway, the, I actually didn't mind the combat system. The thing is, the game really looks like ass. Like it, they, like, I don't know why they just didn't do like a straight up pixel art thing. Like the characters are like 8-bit pixelized characters, but the environments are like these 3D, really flat and bland looking environments.
I'd say more than 8-bit, more like 16-bit, but.
Yeah, okay, 16-bit.
8-bit's not, this is not Nintendo.
Get your right. bits straight, pal.
This is not NES
eight,
quality.
8-bit short, but let's see. Yeah, I just didn't find that the visuals really clicked for me. It just seemed really odd and like half-baked. But
looks like 32 bits. No, no, it's 16.
But so the idea is like the first chapter you can download for free and try it out, and then I guess they have a second chapter which you can already purchase, and they will have more in the future. Cool idea. Don't know that it entirely succeeded.
Better luck next time, guys.
Well, if it was just a small indie team, I mean, it looked like.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to, I'm mentioning the game because I think there probably are people out there who would be interested in it.
Fuck.
And it's free.
Let's just be honest. The game's shit. Let's not pander.
I'm saying I was
Let's
disappointed.
Not pander to indie, okay?
I was disappointed in the game.
A good game's a good game.
Although, I don't know how they're not getting, I just saw a screenshot and that He-Man picture they had definitely looks like He-Man.
Well, the thought had crossed my mind. Like, there was another character that's basically looks like Evil Lyn from He-Man, and it was exact.
Changed the belt color.
Yeah. I don't know. But again, like, it is kind of not many people know about it, so I don't think they would ever actually get in trouble for it. But
you're helping spread the word, though.
I am helping spread the word.
It's like a DeLorean clone with the number 88 on it.
It panders to 80s, kids of the 80s, which we are, so... but that's pretty much all I've got to mention for this time. So I think we should move on. we've got a bit to talk about here still. Let's jump into Hot Button.
Oh God, I forgot about Hot Button.
How long
we
are
always,
you going?
We always forget about Hot Button. We're probably like 2.5 hours right now.
Ooh.
I was ready for the questions.
I don't think we have to get too much into this, but so there's been some rumors going around about all the next-gen consoles. You know, there's not a lot of games coming out this year. Everybody's kind of playing a waiting game right now. They're either already developing for stuff that's coming out or they're waiting to see. So there's the Xbox 720, codename
in quotes
Durango. That's supposed to be the actual follow-up, true follow-up to the 360. Now, for a while there, people weren't too sure if that was going to happen, or if there's been rumors about an Xbox 360 Lite, which could come out, I think, potentially by the end of the year, they were saying, which is like a small, scaled-down version of the Xbox 360 that's geared towards digital downloads and Xbox Live for $100.
Now, what could be interesting with that is if they use that as a platform, like a step between Xbox and the next one, just in terms of like to what trophies were to the previous generation, any new features they have that are like part of, I don't know, the firmware, so to speak, they could be on that still.
Right.
And just downloadable titles, and anything you buy would be compatible with, you know, whatever systems are there for the next box. Right. So if they did that, I would actually be interested in that. If it was like a stepping stone to the next system.
Yeah, I guess, I don't know. Like, again, these are rumors.
This seems really unlikely to me, to be honest.
I'm not sure what the market would be there.
Unless it's like an Apple TV kind of thing.
And I think that's what some people have been saying, is that it would be, you know, they would sell it as not just a gaming system, but like, hey, you can watch Netflix on this, you know, whatever else.
It could be interesting. Like, I have a main PS3, right? If I had a slimmed down PS3 that I could put in other rooms and access my content from the other PS3,
yeah,
that would be cool too. I would do that.
It's possible. And like, you know, people have always been saying, you know, the only reason Microsoft got into game consoles is because they wanted to be that main set-top box that's connected to your TV and your home entertainment system.
It's just funny because I use my PS3 for that.
A media integration device is like...
Yeah. So that's the one rumor that's been out there. Now, just this week, there was another rumor that came out saying that the next Xbox is going to have 16-core CPU.
It's a lot.
Which is a lot. But again, I don't really know exactly what that means. Because
talk about blast processing.
Because without getting too technical here, I've heard PlayStation 3 referred to as having 8 or 9 cores.
Well, 360 could technically have 8 as well. So they have 4 with 2 threads each.
Right. So, I mean, in that sense, it's not that far off from what the current gen is.
Like, kind of doubling, which would make sense.
But the thing is, like, you know, people are talking about, like, well, okay, PCs are at, like, quad core now, right?
Is that
basically where they're at?
Yeah.
And so if it is, like, true cores in that sense, then this is like way beyond what the most powerful PC is right now. But again, the same thing happened when the PS3 came out. It's like, can developers take advantage of all these cores? Like, I think there's a point where you can keep adding cores, but nobody's going to use it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I think the only good thing, like from my perspective, is that when the shift from like the PS2 generation to PS3 generation happened, everyone had to change their engine architecture to handle cores for the PS3. So in theory, because your engine already handles cores, you should hopefully be able to scale up easier now.
And that's definitely something that scales up easily.
If you've done it right. Yeah. I mean, if you've designed your architecture properly, you should be able to scale up for more cores. I mean, obviously there's going to be like issues here and there, but overall, you know, especially with the SPUs, when you're doing, you know, if you're putting all your particle systems out to all 5 SPUs in the PS3, well, I mean, what's to stop you from just bumping that number up to 8 or 10 or 15? It's the same thing. The jobs will just get done faster. So, ideally, I mean, you'll see a great increase in performance with not that much system rewrite by the engineers.
I think part of this, like, with the PS, with all systems now, there's a dashboard component, right? Right. And I remember, like, one of the CPUs on the Xbox was, like, devoted to the dashboard and, like, just playing music.
Just
like
the system ability, software like, that comes
exactly.
with the
And Xbox. You know what? In terms of a developer being able to use it all, I wouldn't be surprised if a lot more now is dedicated to that system stuff. Because, honestly, that's where I get the most frustrated with the current-gen systems is, like, delays hitting the PSN button and waiting for stuff to load, you know, waiting for the... like, most of my freezes in games and in Xbox games come when I hit the dashboard button and I'm waiting for stuff to load. So I'm all for anything that is going to make that procedure more seamless and frustrating.
Less frustrating.
Less frustrating. More. Fuck.
We want more frustration.
I mean, the other good thing about Core is, I mean, me as like an AI programmer or, you know, maybe not right now, but used to be, like, more cores is obviously way better for AI. I mean, AI is probably now the bottleneck, or, I mean, rendering is always going to be probably the biggest bottleneck. But as far as CPU goes, you know, AI, you know, pathfinding, super expensive. And now that we're getting into, you know, I think I heard the new Assassin's Creed is going to have like thousands of people on screen at once. I mean, if you have 1,000 people trying to find their way through a crazy town, that's expensive stuff. And with more cores, you'll be able to do that a lot better. You know, right now we're using like an LOD system, level of detail system. So guys far away don't react as fast, which is fine. You don't notice them anyways. But if you can get to the fidelity where you can use those cores more for AI, you could see some really interesting changes in the games. Ideally, hopefully.
I don't know. I think, like, for me, I know this has been said before, but it's like with the next generation, is it going to be a noticeable jump, right? Like, I would even argue going from the last generation to this generation, yeah, the visuals got nicer, but it was not the jump that we took from, you know, like Super Nintendo to Nintendo 64 or anything like that. Like, I'm kind of wondering if, like, it's interesting, yeah, the Assassin's Creed being able to put more people on screen, that's pretty cool. But it's like, there's such a small number of games that are actually going to be pushing this hardware to its limit.
But those are the games these are for.
I know,
I've talked about this before. It just feels like everything is... every game is going to have to be an MMO shooter with RPG elements. Like, it just feels like every game is becoming the same thing. And I don't know. Like, we talked about Rayman a lot, and that was a game that took next-gen stuff and did something with a genre that hadn't been seen yet. So there's, I just don't think there's that many things we haven't seen yet. Like, I don't know. Would say the biggest change and the way you get a game noticed or like instant credibility for a game is art style. And those are the games I tend to like the most. And I don't know. I just think you're just going to see a shift in tendency to games developing their own art style rather than gameplay.
I'd agree with that. I think, like we were saying, that the core, your architect game engine architecture with your amount of cores should be able to scale. You know, everyone's worried that the cost of developing games is going to like skyrocket out of control, which I mean could happen. But you know, if the tech stays, obviously it won't stay the same. It'll get better, but running it doesn't get harder. Like figuring out how to use a PS4 or how to use an Xbox 720 doesn't get that much harder. The cost shouldn't go exponentially up. Like, I know the art right now that artists produce are already way higher res than you can put out in a game, and then they scale it way down. So it's not like they're not producing that content already. They're already, like, look at Skyrim. They had like HD packs for the PC. Yeah. It's not like they went out
the photorealistic GTA 4 mods.
Yeah, it's not like they went out and made those assets. They already had them because that's the assets that they started with, and then they just took them down so they'd run better on consoles. And so, I mean, it's not like the asset creation is going to take longer. The tech won't take that longer. So I'm thinking that the development cost will stay probably the same unless games get longer and more assets.
But don't you think the actual engine and just the underlying stuff becomes that much more complicated when you have, if you are trying to offload stuff to tons of different cores and you have to still have things communicating with each other like that? Again, I mean, that's part of the reason why Unreal Engine took off this generation, why middleware has become such a big thing, because people just want to buy an engine that has all that stuff and just build on it.
Starting a company from scratch, trying to do a quote AAA title on a next-gen console is probably impossible without a pre-built engine.
Yeah.
It just so daunting now. You need years to make it where you need it to be. So, I mean, you'd have to license. There's no other way around it now, unless you had tons and tons of expendable income and like a huge, you know, programming staff that knew what they were doing.
Yeah. Now, the other part of this hot button that we wanted to get into, PlayStation Orbis, it's the code name for the PlayStation 4, apparently. The rumors that were coming out about this recently were that, well, there's two big things that people are talking about. Number one, no backwards compatibility with the PlayStation 3. Number two,
not an issue to me.
Locking out used games.
Well, that was true with Microsoft's as well.
Okay. So if that is true, then that's a big deal for
I personally have no problem with either of those. Would not affect my decisions at all.
Okay.
I buy new games whenever I can. I still buy used games sometimes. But to be honest, just online passes alone have stopped me from that. Like, I generally just want the full game, and I might as well buy it new at that point, or wait till it's $40.
To me, I don't understand why. I can understand why people are freaking out over that. Like, I still think used games are important. I like to be able to borrow a game from a friend or whatever, right? Like, that makes sense to me. As a gamer, you're not going to necessarily pay full price for every single thing you want to play.
Well, I think the idea would be you'd put a game on like a digital distribution service, so you could try any game you want for a period of time.
Right.
And then you'd have to commit at some point. Do you want to buy it?
Right. But what I'm
so you could still try games. You.
Well, yeah, I agree with that. And what I'm saying is, I don't know why. You know, again, this is just a rumor, but like, it seems weird to me that this is even coming out as a news headline the way it is. Like, I would think these next gen consoles would just go digital only.
That's what I thought.
And not even that would even come up as an issue because it would just, you know, you can't do it. You have to download the games, so you can't.
I think they're scared because I thought I read a stat that something like 50% of Xboxes haven't even been connected to the internet.
Well, that was the other rumor.
That's possible.
Well, that one of these consoles, I think it was the Xbox one, you would have to be connected to the internet all the time.
Yeah.
So that'll be interesting. I mean, the internet's...
And then, like, that, and then at that point, why don't you just get Gaikai or whatever the other one is?
On Live? Or
On Live,
yeah. I just upgraded my PS3 hard drive. I would not have been able to do it without an internet connection. It's impossible. Like, you have to download system update stuff, software. Like, it's almost, getting to a world where internet is a foregone conclusion.
But this is the thing I don't understand. Like, okay, Xboxes, I can understand why 50% of those maybe haven't been hooked up because most people have Wi-Fi now, but the Xbox 360 did not come with Wi-Fi out of the box. You had to buy their pretty expensive adapter. PS3 and the Wii, however, have it out of the box. I don't know. Like, that seems like a pretty easy thing to me to just have internet. Like,
yeah, fair enough.
I would think most people who are buying a game console have Wi-Fi at this point.
Probably. You're probably right, but that could be their concern.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure that's something that's going through their minds, and you know, I'm sure they're looking at why haven't we sold more downloadable games on PSN and Xbox Live, because a lot of people probably haven't even connected to those things.
Yeah.
But I don't know, slowly but surely, that's where things are going, I think.
Dwight's been pimping his digital age for so long now.
Do you honestly think that like the next gen is going to be still like on Blu-rays? Yes. Or?
I'm kind of torn on the whole use games. And
sorry, to answer his question, sure. Before you go, or it's going to be something you buy in stores that you insert,
like a
PSN card
or something. Yeah, that it reads and gets it onto your system.
That makes a little more sense to me. But.
Sorry, yeah.
I'm kind of torn on the whole like use games not being able to be played, because on one side, like, I see their point of view where
the library would go out of business. The
library would go out of business, goddamn. But I mean, from their perspective, obviously, I think it would drive up total sales. I mean, it had to. But I think the exposure, every game's exposure to people would be a lot less. So, I mean, you know, I think where this would hurt is all the kind of like second tier games would get less sales, and all the bigger titles would get more sales because everyone's now saving their money for the big title because they can't trade it in to get more money to buy the second rate title. So I think you'd see,
or take a risk on a second rate title
like Binary Domain,
knowing you could always get some money for it later.
Exactly. Exactly. So I think you'd probably see more money going into the new game sales market.
I think people would be way less willing to take a risk.
That's right. But I think like Gears 3, Modern Warfare, they'd all sell crazy numbers, even more than they're selling now. But, you know, Binary Domain would not exist. No one would buy that shit because they're not willing to risk it. You have to have a really killer demo that gets a lot of ad space or something in order for someone to risk spending their $60 now on that, which I think sucks. And, you know, I can't borrow Frank's version of Binary Domain to see if I like it or just to play it. And, you know, if Binary Domain comes out, well, Binary Domain 2 comes out, let's say. Well, I didn't play Binary Domain 1, you know, whereas in a case now where, you know, maybe I'll buy it used for $20. Oh, I like that game a lot. When Binary Domain 2 comes out, I'll buy it new. That no longer exists. So you kind of like have this like double-edged sword of, you know, exposure versus pure profit for the publishers.
Huck's getting $100 kickback every time he says bye.
I contacted Sega during the intermission.
That's what I should have. Fuck, this guy's smart.
Now, I got to pay for my library game somehow.
Now, the other element of this, too, is that every game that comes out is going to have multiplayer. Like, that's a given. You know, if people are going to plunk down $60 on a game and it doesn't have multiplayer, they're going to be like, forget it, I'm going to buy Gears of War.
On this, I was actually watching a GDC talk from this year, and there was a guy from, I think it's Edar, E-E-E-D-A-R. It's like a video game stat company, and he was saying that multiplayer in games is actually going down on a per like title basis.
Like how many people are actually playing those
games? No, like games that have multiplayer in them is actually going down. That's the trend.
I think there's multiplayer games that dominate.
Yeah.
And everything else is just, even bother?
I think it's got to the point where if you're making a first-person shooter and it's not named Call of Duty Modern Warfare something, why? No one's going to play it. Everyone's going to play that. I mean, Battlefield 3
Like when BioShock and Assassin's Creed, even Splinter Cell, like, we need a multiplayer component. How many people played those for more than a day?
Hours? Probably not. Like, not many.
I still think those are bullet points they want on the back of the box. Whether or not people actually play them, I don't know if that matters. But, I mean, personally,
I think Frank's probably bang on with saying how many people played them for more than a day, right? And I'm sure the publishers see that, and that's why multiplayer is going down. Is that, you know, if they don't have one of the premier multiplayer titles, they're not going to waste their money on it. It's a business thing.
I think that what you will see an increase in, and I'm guessing this is already a trend, is cooperative multiplayer.
Yeah, it was.
And you'll see an increase, I think, in stuff like Journey, where it's a seamless multiplayer experience. Maybe. Where the world is populated through just networked players.
Right.
Less competitive multiplayer and stuff like
that. Yeah, that could happen. Yeah.
It would be pretty easy to design a hub world and just track people's position and stuff like that. Like
PSN Home.
Yeah.
PlayStation Home.
Yeah.
All right. So do we have anything else to say about the next-gen consoles right now? I mean, I guess there's still a lot of rumors out there. Nothing nailed down. Nothing really expected to be even announced this year, as far as I know.
Yeah. At least not at
E3. Yeah.
That's what they say. It's
fucking blue vein right there.
Nice.
Creepy.
all right. Well, we'll keep our ear to the ground. I'm sure we'll be discussing more.
We should start a Kickstarter to send Game Junk to E3.
That's a good idea,
actually. We'll get a video camera. We'll tape everything. We'll post some segments.
Let's get it going. Seriously, that'd be amazing.
I would love it.
You know, it'd be...
How much money would we need?
Well, chicken wings alone.
Couple grand.
Plane tickets and hotel room.
Got
that's
handle.
Yeah, that's it. That's all you're
and
paying
the,
for.
And the booze. Come on. I'm kidding. What's that?
Maybe a little.
Maybe $4,000. Nah, $5,000 maybe.
Debt.
Three plane tickets.
You'll get around the clock coverage.
Around the clock.
We'll work out the details. We'll get back to you. All right. So that's it for a hot button, and I guess we'll get to the junk mail, which we've got a few questions here. We'll start with this one comes from Harry Claiborne II. Rocco Bott of Mega 64 fame recently wrote an editorial in GamePro on why video game humor is so special. He essentially said a funny game comes along once every blue moon and the gaming community runs all its jokes into the ground. For example, the cake is a lie. How many times have you heard that screamed at conventions? He finds it extremely grating, but at the same time he writes that it's a fascinating phenomenon because video games are relatively new and we're not really sure what they are yet. So people get excited when a video game manages to make them laugh. It touches them on a human level, which is rare for this medium. I think he hit the nail on the head. 99% of video game humor sucks. Even a AAA title like Infamous 2 seems like it was written by a 4-year-old. Is this because games are built around a good gameplay mechanic rather than a good story? Thanks, Harry.
Yes.
I don't know. I would up that to 99.99999% of games are not funny. Like,
I disagree.
Are they really? Have you ever laughed out loud at a video game?
Yes.
Yeah.
What?
Binary Domain.
Yes.
Well, the most,
actually, I did though. Seriously.
The most recent one that I would say is Portal 2. But
I mean, it's clever.
For me, see, this is the thing. There was an era where there were a lot of funny video games being made, and I will admit, I was younger then. Maybe some of that humor wouldn't be as funny to me now. But the people who made the games then are still making games now. I.e.
they're just less funny. They're like Eddie Murphy and Steve Martin.
You don't find Double Fine games funny.
No, I find them, again, it's a clever thing. Like
charming. Find them charming.
A slight chuckle.
Very charming. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
But to equate it to like my favorite comedy movie where I'll laugh out loud constantly, nothing has come close to that. Like an actual comedy game. And I'm not singling out comedy as a genre there either. Any type of movie, like, I don't think any game has come close to the average of what those can be. Like, there's just this constant need to try and imitate movies and not coming close.
I think one of the problems, too, is, like, pacing in a game.
Yeah, games can't have to be long.
You can't pace a game to set up jokes unless it's one big cutscene. You just can't set it up. You can't have a guy wandering around for half an hour or hearing the first joke, then wander around for half an hour, then hear the joke that's supposed to be right after that.
Yeah.
It just won't work. It won't be funny. It's hard. It's hard to pull off.
I mean, the best, in terms of movies, I'd say we're going to get to another junk mail too. Uncharted, I think, has come the closest to being an adventure film.
Well, this is what I was going to say is that I think there was an era where people were making funny games and sense of humor was valued in games. Like all the early Sierra games, LucasArts games, they're all pretty funny. And then I think somewhere along the way, people got really serious about games because, you know, they're wanting to prove that they're art and that they can write serious stories.
I would say that might have started with Final Fantasy VII.
Sure. I mean, I could see that. But I think, you know, the thing is, and it's still happening now, and the people who buy games are feeding into this because they want these gritty, dark, serious stories. And they're forgetting the fact that some of the best blockbuster movies of all time have great senses of humor. So they're just missing that element. But another kind of recent game, there was the Bard's Tale remake they made for, I think, Xbox and maybe PlayStation 2, or maybe just PC.
So. No, I think
But that was PS2, that was pretty funny from what I remember. And I think there's still games here and there that are funny, but I do think that, again, it's just the fact that people are trying to be serious and trying to write dramatic stuff because they think they need have something to prove.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Stuff. I mean, and from experience, you don't go into a publisher pitch meeting and tell them the jokes you're going to tell in the game. You show them the gameplay mechanics that people are going to find fun. And that's probably why Tim Schafer's adventure didn't get picked up, because he was probably pitching that it was going to be funny and an adventure game, and people are like, where's the game? You know, like, no one will pay for that. No one will pay for humor. They pay for gameplay. So, by that, I mean, publishers won't pay a developer to make it.
Right.
So that's, I mean, I don't think any game will start with humor unless they're started by Kickstarter. Apparently, you know, and even then, it's the promise of humor. Who is the judge of what's funny, though? So it's going to be hard. It's going to be hard for them to pull off. I mean, obviously they did it, like you're saying, back in the day with Sierra games, but those were smaller scale and, you know, probably easier to write for.
But another problem is humor doesn't lend itself to gameplay, right? Like, action lends itself to gameplay, right? Yeah. Get a gun in someone's hand. When you think about games that have tried to turn experiences like laughter or humor into gameplay, I would say L.A. Noir and, you know, turning being a detective and talking to people into gameplay, the payoff just isn't there. I'm not saying it could never be, but it's a lot harder to come up with a good system that turns those kinds of emotions into a mechanic, a gameplay mechanic, unlike action, which is pretty obvious. Shoot someone.
I've got one for you.
Whoa, dazzle me.
Conker's Bad Fur Day.
Now that is a funny game. You got me.
See, it can be done. It just doesn't happen very often.
You got it.
It's definitely hard to pull off. I mean,
yeah. Yeah.
All right. So here's one from Philip. He says, so after playing Deus Ex and Arkham City, the best games of last year, my 360 now just sits on my desk gathering dust. Do you have problems getting the motivation to play a game after beating something you found amazing? I still game on my 3DS and play Minecraft with my friends, but I just don't find any of the new games coming out will match the greatness of those two other games. Thanks, Philip.
I don't know. I don't have problems finding stuff to play. Quite the opposite. I do get in slumps where I just don't feel like playing games, and especially when you work in the industry and there's times where you're super busy and, you know, you're working, you have a controller in your hand half the day and you're like, I don't even want to look at this fucking thing when I get home. So, but for the most part, I might move from system to system, but there's always stuff to play.
Yeah. I'm kind of with you on that. I mean, I run into the same thing. Sometimes I just don't feel like playing, but when I find the only thing is after I play a really good game, it could probably jade my opinion of the next game I play, because I might still be thinking about that previous game, so it might influence that. But I don't necessarily put that down. Like, if anything, if I start a new game and I'm thinking about, say, Uncharted or Batman,
I'll just throw
it back in and play some more. Like, it's not like the game's dead. Yeah. I can't go back to it. So, I mean, that's basically where I stand on that.
Or I'll buy it for another platform. Yeah. Double up on Trophs.
All right, so this one was from Casper. Kind of related to the Kickstarter thing. He says, the final budget for the Double Fine Adventure comes down at about $2 million. If you were given $2 million to use developing your own game, what would you try to make? I imagine Sean would make a game about Ninja Turtles, but what gives Frank or Andrew a hard on?
I'm not going to give my ideas out over the interwebs.
Yeah,
but I got a game idea that I would love to make one day.
Licensed property?
Oh no,
original.
It would be creating
original IP.
Yeah. But it would be an arcadey type game. It would not be a AAA title.
I could say the same thing, actually. Well, I mean, Ryan and I are kind of developing a 2D RPG right now, which is not a secret. So, I mean, I would probably take the $2 million and spend $1 million on developing that and $1 million on marketing. And I think that's because, as we all have seen with Waveform, without marketing money, you're not getting any coverage.
This guy is bitter.
It's hard. I mean, I can email people as much as I want, but if I'm not putting any marketing into their website, they're not going to pay attention. Usually. That's what I found.
Ooh.
Just saying. Just saying.
Interesting.
So,
did Minecraft have marketing?
Marketing? Went viral, baby. Went viral.
Just kidding.
Yeah, no. I'd spend half on marketing. Guaranteed.
Cool. So next up, we've got Jason, who says, what do you guys think of board games getting made for the iPad, such as Settlers of Catan, Carcassonne, and Magic the Gathering?
I'm all for it. You can too. Always still have the original game board experience if you want, but it's a convenient, portable, and sometimes single-player way of enjoying the games you like when you can't get your friends together or online.
Yeah, I like the idea. I haven't played the ones he mentioned, but I know friends, like, I get together with some guys from back home and play board games every once in a while, and we were looking for an online sort of like web-based version of Risk to play when we, you know, go in long stretches of not getting together, and we didn't really find anything. And I think this sort of like iPhone mobile way of putting these board games together is a great way to connect.
I just see every board game taking the Draw Something and Words with Friends approach, and like, and Scrabble's doing it. Like, to be fair, they Words with Friends kind of rip them off, but like, just you have 10 games going at once and you just jump in and out of them.
Yeah, I actually just read an article today that was basically saying that asynchronous games are like the next big thing, and I mean, the first one I remember playing was, do you remember Scrabulous when they had that on Facebook? It was like a Scrabble ripoff, but it was called Scrabulous. And then they got sued and they had to change the name. And then I think people stopped playing after that. But
Words with Friends came along.
Yeah, then the floodgates were open. But
these aren't really new concepts, though. I mean, like, email games of chess and stuff have been around forever, right?
It's true. Like, I mean, these are a little more convenient.
Yeah, it's just making it a little more accessible.
Yeah. But, I mean, I think the iPad is, like, the perfect format for board games, you know, on a digital device. And actually, one that I have been playing that I didn't mention is Ticket to Ride. The board game's fun, but I think the iPad and iPhone version of that game is like the best digital translation of a board game I've seen. So, and that's, I think it's still free for iPhone right now, so check it out if you can. Okay, Patrick says, hi there, game men. After Frank's glowing statements about the Uncharted franchise last episode, I started playing the first one.
Wait, me and about a bajillion people on the line.
No, all you, buddy. I'm a couple hours in and it's pretty bad so far. The aiming system is just bad, the level design is nothing special, and also quite uninspiring and uncreative. I get to the next room or valley or whatever, clear it out, and what do you know? A second wave of enemies show up as soon as I take a few steps forward, and sometimes even a third. Time and time again, enemies who I have to shoot 3 to 4 times to kill unless I get a headshot. Although many of them survive even that I've experienced. The platforming parts are nothing that hasn't been done in Tomb Raider or similar games. I don't see what's so special about it, though I might give Uncharted 3 a spin if I can find it for cheap. Finally, the PS3 controllers suck ass compared to the 360 ones. Anyone who thinks differently is out to lunch. Maybe I should mention that I mostly play on PC where the aiming is usually impeccable, so my standards are pretty high. But there's plenty of games on the 360 that have a good aiming system, such as Halo, Gears of War, Lost Planet, to name a few.
Well, that aiming is... it's a personal choice. I like the feel of Uncharted's aiming. I've never denied that Uncharted was nothing more than ripping off various concepts, such as Gears of War's cover mechanic, Tomb Raider's adventures and platforming mechanics, and combining them into...
Indiana Jones-esque adventure. Exactly.
But ripping all those things off and combining it into the perfect package, I don't know. It works for me. What got me off the first time I played Uncharted was the subtleties, like going through the sub the first time and the way you grab doors, like we've talked, like it was instant load blow. Like just that kind of stuff, that uniqueness.
Just the polish, the cinematic polish.
And putting and this is where 3 kind of got off the rails for me, but putting a game out there that has tons of hints of things that don't feel like systems. And
like the yellow bars that you can jump on.
Unique moments.
Everything's yellow that you can grab onto. And you don't really notice it, but subconsciously you know you can jump on that thing. And like just things like that. And to me, what got me about Uncharted was... I think the enemy health, especially in Uncharted 1, is an issue, which they fixed quite a lot in Uncharted 2.
I like the skill mechanic of getting headshots.
Yeah.
And I think they actually employed cover by me, and this is something that's expanded on in each version of the game, but, you know, hanging and shooting, hanging and throwing grenades. Like, you have a lot of options, and I don't know. I'm not, I don't resent old Patrick there. Everyone has different opinions. For me, I love it.
I think the atmosphere of the game in general, like we were talking about, brings so much to that game too. It kind of drives you through. And I don't know, I kind of disagree with him about the level design. I mean, I guess it's nothing special, but it's not bad.
It's no different than any other shooter.
Yeah, and I think it's laid out well.
You get into an area with a bunch of enemies, you clear them out.
Yeah, you never get lost. You always know where to go, like... the hand, like place where to jump is usually pretty well defined, or there's some sort of like subtle hint to tell you, hey, look up here or whatever. Yeah. I think
it just doesn't sound like it's his kind of game.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I just think that like I could see how somebody would have that reaction, but first of all, he's playing the first one. I mean, part two is
way better.
Huge jump.
And the big thing there is the set pieces. And
exactly. And that's when you really get pulled in and you start feeling like this is a blockbuster movie that's interactive, like all that stuff. But I don't know, like, I mean, if he says he likes Halo, Gears of War, all those games, I don't see, like, just because the shooting isn't precise. Like, I think this is way more involving than those games. Like, I like Halo and Gears of War, but, like, story-wise, there's just so much more to get out of Uncharted.
Yeah. Character is the biggest thing.
Yeah, maybe you should just skip one then if he's not liking it. Try two. Give two a try.
I don't want to get him mad at me again.
Well,
I feel bad enough already.
I remember playing a bit of the first one and not being entirely grabbed by it, but
played the first one 7 times.
Part two is pretty insane.
In part two, I feel they pace out the game a little better as far as
for sure.
Enemy battles versus like platforming and big set pieces. It's not like Uncharted 1. I remember there being like ways and ways
and changing locations.
Yeah. So I mean, maybe one is a little, I don't know, not for him, but maybe two would be a little more accessible.
All right.
Oh, well.
A few more emails here. Let's jump into these. Steven in Chandler, Arizona says, "What's good in the hood, game men? My PS3 recently suffered the infamous yellow light of death. Has anything like this ever happened to you guys? I'm talking error codes, corrupted data, anything like that that seriously messed up your day-to-day gaming. Also, Frank, you mentioned last episode getting the Jack and Daxter collection. If you actually got it, what did you think?"
I have had my GPU on my original Xbox Go. I still have it. I have not fixed it. I bought a Slim instead. I've had several, I guess, five Red Ring of Deaths on Xbox. At one point, I just learned to have two of every system just in case. It's the safest bet.
Everyone had the Xbox, like, especially early on, like it.
And that's when I was fully into achievements.
Right.
That was painful. That did not feel good. But what can you do? As for Jack and Daxter, I did buy it. I platinumed Jack 1, which is one of my favorite games of all time. Official 4-star rating for right here. Jack and Daxter 1. Haven't got into 2 yet, but I remember not liking it as much, but.
Didn't your PS3 die too?
Yeah, that's what I was saying. My first one, the GPU.
Oh, I missed what you said there.
And I lost all my save game data, which blows.
Yeah.
And they have like this proprietary file format that it's like impossible to get it. So stupid.
But cloud saves now.
Well, this was before cloud saves.
You couldn't pull out your hard drive and plug it
in? No, because as soon as you put it into another one, it has to format it. And you can't read it from a computer because it's got a special file format.
Oh, I thought you could do some sort of
file transfer. So what I'm going to try and do is use that thing on his desk, put it into that, and see if the PS3 can read that. Because it can read external hard drives. Mm-hmm. It's a long shot, but we'll see.
I had 2 Ring of Deaths on my Xbox. No problems with my PlayStation or Wii. And I also had the Xbox chainsaw adapter installed where it chews the shit out of your discs. And that was real fun.
I also had my PS1. I had the first edition where you had to turn it upside down to get it to work, which I didn't find out until a year after it happened. Nice. I had my PSP 1000 brick on me. I had my PS2 stop reading the blue bottom discs. Just a hell of a lot of problems. It's a wonder I'm even around anymore.
All right. Henrik wants to know if we have any good trolling stories to share. Is it hard to troll your friends when all you play is hot seat multiplayer? I suspect Frank tickles his FIFA opponents in penalty situations, but did any of you ever go off the deep end offline or online? Love from the cave.
I've had a few. I'm not guilty of this, thank God. I've had a few friends who have, during breakaways on NHL, hit the guide button on their They say it was an accident. I don't know if it was. I don't think so. But that to me is pretty egregious and unforgivable. And that's why I feel the need to bring it up and remind them.
I also don't really do too much of that.
Yeah.
Occasionally I'll chirp some people in NHL lobbies, but
I'll chirp. I definitely chirp, but only when it's warranted and when I'm just playing better.
All right, we gotta
wrap it up
here.
Okay,
so we had a few more emails. We'll save them for next week or next month, I guess. just quick rundown of what's coming up over the next little while. There's not too much in stores. I know Fez is coming out on Xbox Live this week. Looking forward to checking that out.
Heard bad things.
I heard amazing. Are you kidding?
I heard that it was really buggy.
Heard it's amazing.
Whoa.
Witcher 2.
Prototype 2. The Walking Dead game from Telltale. Kind of curious about that, but after Jurassic Park, I don't know.
That game's coming out already?
Wow. Yep.
I thought they just announced it.
The big games in May are Max Payne 3 and Diablo 3.
Right.
And then not too much else. Darksiders 2 in June, but they're saying that might get delayed. I don't know. I guess we're hoping probably Mass Effect 3 will be the next big thing we'll tackle.
Yeah.
And
but possibly not review.
Not definitely not review. We are not reviewing.
So yeah.
Only if we feel like it.
But anyway, thanks everyone for listening, and don't forget to check out our Facebook page, facebook.com/gamejunk, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/gamejunkpodcast, and obviously our website is gamejunkpodcast.com, and you can follow us all individually.
Dirty Frank with 3 R's and Dirty.
My Angry Commute, all one word.
And Film Junk. Until next time, we'll see you guys later. Bye-bye.
Toodaloo. The best.
It's where real men play games.
Where?
Street Pass.
Am I going to get some new puzzle pieces out of this?
One.